Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recording.
Hello, Chicago!
You should sit. This is bad.
New day is on the horizon!
Pete McMurray.
He's a good man.
What? Shut up, he thinks he's witty.
On 720 WGN.
Ah, yes, a beautiful Saturday afternoon. This is one of those days where it's sneaky cold outside. I mean, it looks beautiful until you go outside and you freeze your butt off. Pete McMurray, Andy Mazur in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Happy Holy Saturday. Happy Passover. This is what I love.
Yes.
I have a burger from Chicago Cut Steakhouse that I'm going to have for lunch. And you have, what, mozza crackers and
yeah,
jelly?
Yeah, but I'm going to eat the burger with no bun.
Burger with no bun. Can you do that?
I can do that.
I'd like to get that cleared by a rabbi. Are you sure about that?
Totally.
Now, I thought Passover you couldn't eat during the daylight.
No, come on. You just can't eat anything that's leavened.
Okay.
Anything with wheat, with yeast, with flour, with grain, that's out.
So you can have a T-bone steak during Passover?
Steak.
That doesn't seem right
to me.
You'd
be surprised at how many things you can't eat that have flour, yeast, and can have rice.
Okay.
Corn is out
as well.
You can
have a steak, you can have a burger, you can eat bacon.
Yeah.
Can you have bacon?
That would kind of defeat the purpose, but you know.
It's good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too. I was ready to do some baseball today, but you know, this is another great option to have for me today.
Boy, the White Sox have been in the news this week.
Yeah.
Do you agree with the suspension?
I don't. And I've mainly because I'm not a big fan of Joe West. I think I've made that pretty clear
everybody,
over the years.
Everybody can't stand Joe West. I don't know anybody that says, oh, Joe West is doing the game today. This is going to be great.
It's usually going to be about him if he is. So
why is that? And if we all know it, doesn't Major League Baseball know it?
Yeah, they know it. But the umpires union is pretty strong.
Okay.
So that's one of them. But, you know, you get into this gray area because it's just the way baseball has been for so many years. You hit a home run, you pimp, you style, you know.
Well, explain to people what happened.
So Tim Anderson hits a home run in the fourth inning Wednesday afternoon against the Royals and turns towards his dugout and, like, javelins the bat in celebrations, and he yells, let's go. White Sox are up 2-0. They're trying to win the series against the Royals.
Right.
He runs around the bases, nothing doing. Sixth inning, he comes up, and the first pitch from Brad Keller, the Royals pitcher, drills him in the fanny.
Mm-hmm.
And he stares at Keller a little bit. Now, the catcher, Martin Maldonado, and Anderson are kind of walking a little bit toward the first base line. And it looked like they were defusing the situation because Anderson was kind of patting him on the chest protector. Like,
he had to know that was coming.
Well, yeah, that's the part of it.
Right.
Because he wasn't showing up the Royals. He was firing up his team.
Right, but he had to know that they were going to throw at him.
I get that. Okay. But, you know, we were talking about this with John Williams earlier today, but, you know, the NFL relaxed all of its celebration rules in the end zone.
Right.
And, you know, it's not a 15-yard penalty unless you use a prop. Okay? I mean, if you go out, if you put your cell phone out of the you know, like Joe Horn did so many years ago, you're going to get a penalty. But people feel like baseball is still the old fuddy-duddy way because of these unwritten rules that I tweeted the other day. I wish they'd write them down so we could all see these unwritten rules.
It's always been an unwritten rule that if you show up a pitcher like throwing a bat or tossing a bat like that, you're going to get hit the next time you're up. And I heard Ed Farmer yesterday on Cochran's show talk about this very thing.
Yeah.
He had to know that it was coming.
He did know. But here's the thing. I mean, and after the game, you know, Keller got a 5-game suspension, which is basically one start. And he's appealing. And he, after the game, said that he didn't intend to hit him, that the pitch got away.
Come on.
I'm like, yeah, right.
But here's the
thing.
We're
all there. We all know what's happening.
They get kicked out of the game and everything's fine. Why get suspended? Why are they getting suspended?
Well, here's the deal. There was reports through the four-letter network, which starts with an E and ends with an N, and they were talking about a racially charged word or phrase that Tim Anderson uttered during the fracas. And I'm not going to repeat the word. You can look it up if you want to look it up. But it was apparently a racially charged word. Which I believe the reason that Joe West threw him out was because he heard that word and then decided that that was inappropriate. And
is that rumor or is that true?
It's being reported by a lot of media sources.
Ah.
So again, I don't know this for a fact, so I can't speak to the fact that yes, it's true or no, it's not. I can only go off of what is being reported out there. And that might have been the reason why the suspension. And, you know, and Ricky Renteria, with their manager and their bench coach, they were going at it. And it was just, it escalated because Cal Eldred, who was the pitching coach for the Royals, jumped over the railing and came in and re-escalated things after it looked like it had died down.
Right.
And he did not get ejected or fined.
Jeez,
which makes a lot of sense.
Interesting.
And, you know, baseball has been on this campaign. There was a tweet by MLB showing a picture of Anderson throwing the bat back toward the dugout. And it said something to the effect, and I'm not going to quote it exactly here, but paraphrasing, keep doing what you do, Anderson. And now he's suspended.
It's interesting that you say that because it's probably a 20-something kid doing the Twitter doing the account MLB for MLB, account. Right. And they're not even paying attention.
Right. So, I mean, it opens up a whole can
of
worms.
It's a bunch of old guys that are in charge. You know, tell me about Tim Anderson. What kind of personality does he have?
He's a great personality. This guy loves playing the game.
He seems very happy.
Oh, he just had a baby. He just had a second baby.
Is he an emotional guy?
He's an emotional guy. He's a former basketball player turned baseball player. He is learning and has learned a lot about the game of baseball now and understands what it is. He was trying to fire up his club. That is what he does. He is one of the leaders in the clubhouse now.
Now, let me take the other point of view.
Yeah. If it happened to the White Sox, I'd probably be saying something different.
Now, doesn't this skyrocket the White Sox? Tim Anderson's going to be known all over the place. He was on ESPN for days.
Yeah. This is not the first time that he's gotten into it with a pitcher or the Royals. Now, the Royals, and he got into it last opening series, again, with a home run situation and pimping and running into their catcher, Salvador Perez, at second base. They were having a little jaw, and the bench is cleared.
Okay.
And about 2 years ago or 3 years ago, Marcus Stroman, who's a starting pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, who actually tweeted in defense of Tim Anderson the other day, as did Trevor Bauer, the pitcher for the Indians.
Okay.
But he and Marcus Stroman got into it, which caused the benches to empty as well. So I don't think it's a pattern. I think it's just, again, it's Tim Anderson being Tim Anderson, being a fired up guy, plays the game at an emotional level, tries to fire up his team, doesn't mean any disrespect to the other, although it may look that way. He does not intend that.
So if you're fired up and you hit a home run, you have to drop your bat, you can't jump up and down, and you run around the bases.
You hit a home run. That is hard to do.
It is very hard to do.
And the thing that I love about hearing some of these pitchers and some of these other guys that have been around the game a long time, you don't want them to celebrate? Get them out.
Mm-hmm. Throw strikes.
Throw a strike and don't let them hit it.
I'm with you.
So there you go.
How's your lawn?
My lawn is dirt right now. It's really.
We're both homeowners.
I'm not kidding you when I say that.
We're going to talk to a landscaping guy at 135. Maybe he can help you.
Maybe he can come over.
Joe Polina from TommyPolina.com in Mount Prospect is going to talk lawns.
Okay.
And anybody that knows me and has heard me on WGN, I've been on Lou Manfredini's show. Mm-hmm. I text Lou all the time.
Yes,
I'm obsessed with my lawn.
And that's okay.
Right.
It's a healthy obsession.
I sent Lou a text 2 weeks ago, and I said, is it time yet? And he knew exactly what I was talking about. He's like, nope.
The seed.
You got to wait. Because it has to be multiple days over 50 degrees before you put the grass seed down and the fertilizer.
Exactly.
So even though, as a homeowner and a guy that loves his lawn, I'm anxious right now to do something to my lawn. I need some directions. So we're going to talk to Joe Polina. So are you putting grass seed down or anything?
I have not tried. I have an issue with my front lawn because I have a huge, huge tree right there taking all the sunlight away.
So do I. Remember, we talked about this last year. You got to cut the branches.
And my backyard is like I wouldn't let anybody go back there.
I got to come over to your house and check it out.
It's awful.
I did lawn work for years in college, so I understand the whole landscaping game. So I could help.
Yeah, I mean, I need help. I mean, I'm in desperate need of help.
Give me your address right now. Okay. Just go ahead and say it on the air.
It's 1234 Main Street.
And at 205, we're going to talk to our old friend Gina Murata, who is a life coach.
She's the best.
She sent something out this week. Let me see if I can find it. Oprah has a new book, and Gina sent... I'm on her email list, and she also tweeted it out. 3 pieces of career advice in Oprah's new book, which I thought was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to read the whole friggin' book.
No.
You can get the 3 pieces of advice. That's all I needed, which is great.
Gina's awesome.
Gina sent that out. She is a person, if you need career advice, if your relationship's in the toilet, she's just a good person to talk to that'll get you on the right path.
She's a good listener.
So she comes on at 2:05. It's Pete McMurray, Andy Mazur in the Allstate Skyline Studios. It's 720 WGN. Oh, 720 WGN. What's the weather like on Easter tomorrow? Let's bring up our old friend, Mike Jansen from WGN-TV. You're on your way to work right now.
I will be leaving here shortly. I'm not there yet. You hold off as long as you possibly can. Especially on the weekend, right? You don't want to go, so you just kind of wait until the traffic's not bad.
Mike, I know you a little bit, and I'm going to have to venture to say that being a weather person at WGN-TV is not a grind.
No. Not at all. there are days when things can, go on and on and on, but, last Sunday, for instance, was so much fun with the snow coming down and everything like that, I think just the dirty looks in the hallway was the biggest, downer of the day, which is people upset about the fact that there was snow, even though I said, look, in 2 days it'll be gone.
Yeah, I apologize. I was one of those people that gave you the dirty look. I was filling in on CLTV that night, and it took me longer to get in there than I can remember during the winter. It took me longer to get in there.
You know, I openly admitted that my forecast was underdone in terms of how much snow we were going to see. And so was everybody else's, for that matter, so much so that it wasn't until the afternoon when the damage was done and IDOT or CDOT went to full crews. So you already had the problems out there, and then everybody was trying to play catch-up because nobody really thought, okay, it's going to snow this much, this hard. And, yeah, last Sunday was just nasty, but... You know what, I think if you're going to have a snow, even if it was in the wintertime, I'd take a snow like that if it was going to be gone in 2 days. Mm-hmm. I'd be fine with it.
David Plyer,
it doesn't happen that often.
David Plyer had a line this morning. He said it was like shoveling Italian ice last week, which was so true.
I didn't even bother. It was so slushy. You know, normally your rain to snow ratio is your snow to rain ratio is 10 to 1. So basically, 1 inch of rain equals 10 inches of snow. That's average. Well, we were getting it in last week. One of the measurements we'd gotten in from one of the suburbs, it was averaging about 6.75 to 1. So even 1 inch of rain only, instead of being equipped making it up to 10 inches of snow, we're only making it 6.75. So it was so wet. It was just unbelievable.
All people want to do when they see a weather person is complain. I'm sure if you're at the grocery store, you're hanging out at the Jewels, people are, Mike, come here. I need to talk to you about something. What's going on with this weather?
Well, you know, it was last weekend I ran into a woman when I went into the church service on Sunday, and she asked me about the weather, and I told her, I said, look, I said, this is why, I said, this is no fun, and I said, well, this is why I didn't take credit for it last Sunday, mm-hmm. when you said, oh, well, thanks for the nice weather. I said, I don't make the weather, so I'm not going to take credit for the nice days, that way I don't have to take blame on the nasty days, and all you can possibly do is just tell people what the conditions are going to be and hope that they know I have no control over it. And if push comes to shove, I just tell him it's going. I just say, look, Tom Bendis, blame him.
And he's Teflon, though. Nothing sticks to him,
yeah,
right?
Nothing sticks to Tom. But you know what? The guy has been at WGN since I was 2 years old. So I think he's probably earned his stripes by now.
Mm-hmm. And people really aren't going to rage at a Tom Skilling.
No way.
He's such a likable person.
He is. You meet him, make sure you booked out a half hour just to chat with him, just say hello to him. You might get into a conversation with him that's going to last a while.
I love it.
I'm not even sure that he goes to the store on his own anymore, because I'm guessing a trip to the grocery store could take 3 or 4 hours just going in to get a few items, just from bumping into people and saying hi and one question about the weather, and he's off and going. But he's amazing. There's no doubt about it.
True story about Tom Skilling. We had him on the show on a regular basis. I'm like, Tom, I want to take you out to dinner just to, say thanks. And he's like, you know what? On the weekends, I like to stay at home and cook. Because if he goes out, he has to talk to every single person. Think about the most recognizable people in the city of Chicago. Tom Skilling's got to be in the top three.
Well, if you think about it this way, I mean, think about some of the athletes that we have had come through here. Now, let's just take Michael Jordan and put him in a category all by himself.
Sure.
But say you have Brian Urlacher, for instance, and he goes into a restaurant, and people are going to recognize him, but, you know, he played for the Bears for basically a decade, and now he's out of the public eye. Tom, meanwhile, is still here. I mean, and he's going to continue to be here, for long after some of these other guys retire from their current positions. So, you know, he outlasts them all, and he just keeps going. I mean, I don't think there's any end in sight at this point in time.
God, that's so true. Well, what's going on with the weather? Because I'm looking out the windows, and it looks just, we're on the 18th floor here at 303 Wacker, and it just looks gorgeous outside. But when you walk outside, there's like a 50-mile-an-hour wind in your face downtown.
Yeah, and it's in the 40s, and it just feels awful. Now, the good thing is, we go through tonight, and we go from this north wind. It'll start to die down here during the evening hours. But then it turns around out of the southwest, and tomorrow morning, for anybody that gets up early and goes, like, say, a sunrise service or something like that, it's going to be a little chilly, but it's going to be about what you would expect this time of year. I mean, seasonal averages are in the lower 40s. We're going to be pretty close to that. But as those winds start to pick up as we go through the day, and the sun, looking like we're going to have a whole bunch of sunshine tomorrow, you know, we're looking at afternoon highs well into the 70s, probably looks like upper 70s, and I'm not going to be surprised by somebody tagging 80 out there.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised by that at all, especially south. But, last year we had a high of 35. So it was chilly. It was nasty last year. But if we, you know, make it into the 70s tomorrow, that'd be the fourth time that we've had a high in the 70s on Easter Sunday this decade.
God, that's so awesome.
It's not unprecedented. We know it's the call of the weather. It bounces all over the place. I mean, we know how it is. And you go from how bad last weekend was, jump ahead 1 week, and
right,
then maybe touch 80 degrees, and you still have, you know, you have some leaves on the trees or some buds on the trees, but no real leaves yet, no real green. And it's like, well, okay, I guess this is what we're going to do. So you take the good, you take the bad, right? Isn't that the facts of life?
Well, Mike, why are people so surprised that have grown up in Chicago or have lived in Chicago for years? Because this is spring. This is what happens. It snows one weekend, it's 70 degrees, and probably next week it'll get down to mid-40s or 50s, right?
Well, I think what it is, it's funny because I made this comment to my co-anchors last week, and I said, you know, I think part of the thing that happens to some of us, as we get older, we get
less patient,
tired of winter, right? Yeah, exactly. When you were a kid, when you were younger, it's cold, whatever, you throw on 18 layers and you head out the door. And you just dealt with it. And whenever it became spring, it became spring. You maybe were a little upset by it, but what were you going to do? Then you get to be a little bit older, you're like, okay, I'm so sick of this. And it's basically, I'm not going to lie, I would say probably by the first of the year, by January 1st, I'm done with snow by then. That's the way I'm getting at this point in time.
That's why you got to get a place in Florida or Phoenix.
Yeah, Arizona, something like that.
Right.
But, you know, that's many, many moons from now when I can finally retire out there. But, you know, for now, I'm okay with it. I mean, you know, we had the polar vortex this year and how super cold that was. And
I feel like we have the polar vortex every single year. But you're right. We have less patience as we get older. And it's like, why am I dealing with this snow? Why am I doing that?
And I think what more people are finding out is, hey, you know what? A couple of clicks on the internet, and I can find myself a plane seat and go someplace warm for
right.
this week.
Yeah,
I mean, we took 1 week at the end of March. We went to New Orleans for my wife's birthday, and we were in Houston for 2 days, and we were in New Orleans for the other four or five. Just that 1 week at the end of March of having shorts on,
you got
to
get away.
I kind of bottled it up a little bit, shoved some of that warm air in my pockets, and said, okay, I can get you maybe the next month or whatever there's going to be in Chicago, and just know that sooner or later things are going to work out okay.
See, you know, we're tough people in the Midwest, but we also complain a lot because, you know, you talk about, we complain about the cold, and we can't wait for it to be warm, and then in the middle of July, it's 95 degrees with a humidity of 1,000%, and we can't wait for
it's
winter.
It's so hot.
You know, it's like you can't have it both ways.
Finally going to cool off.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways.
The humidity, it's so hot. It's crazy.
I will tell you one of the things that we may have to deal with a little bit harsher this spring than what we have, because the winter drug on for so long, some of the pollen from like trees and grass, for instance, especially for trees, have held back a little bit. And for the folks that follow pollen and everything, basically because that got held back, you're going to see the tree pollen come on the same time as some of the other seasonal allergies. So instead of it being this gradual thing where you have trees bloom for a little while and then that particular pollen level goes down and grass is up and then it goes down, they're all going to come on at once. So anybody that suffers from that kind of thing, this next month and a half could be just awful. And that's before we even get into the mold season.
So, Mike,
which,
Go ahead.
Nasty.
Okay, no, so, no, Mike, before you go, tomorrow we're going to see mid-70s.
I'm thinking upper 70s, a very good chance of that tomorrow, and somebody out there, especially south, could tag 80 degrees. There will be a lot of people very happy to volunteer to be the one that maybe says, you know what, you guys want to do an Easter ham? How about we put it on the grill? I'll do it.
Easter ham.
Just being outside in that sunshine. Now, make sure, obviously, you know, us Midwesterners, we've been stuck inside for so long. The old sunscreen, probably not a bad idea. Don't need to walk back into the office on
sunscreen.
Sunscreen. What's
people
that?
Are going to be golfing tomorrow. They can't wait to barbecue. Oh, yeah. Everybody's going to be outside. I love this.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
I will be happy up until the time I pull into the driveway or the parking lot at the station and go, okay, I'll drag myself
place.
In there for now. But you know what? Anybody that walks that I see in the station is going to be happy to see me.
Yep.
So
they
I
are.
Guess, you know, that's the trade-off.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be there Sunday, too. So I'll smile at you this time rather than give you the frown.
No bro hug with
well,
Mike?
If he wants one, yeah.
Just don't throw anything at me.
I won't do that.
Mike.
Last time, you could have easily drug a snowball in and just thrown that down the
good
hallway.
Good point.
Mike, what time are you on?
I will admit, I did not look to see what the forecast was going to be in Detroit tomorrow. I don't know if you guys will carry a game or not. I guess we'll have to wait and see. Obviously, today was a real mess out there for the White Sox trying to play a ball game.
That's why we're on the air.
The Cubs are happy to be where they are going to be. We'll see how much the wind maybe affects today's game compared to what it was yesterday. That was fun to watch that particular ball game and watch the ball blow all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, tomorrow though, anybody going to the Cubs game? My goodness, you couldn't ask for a better April day at Wrigley Field when you can. You know, there are times when I don't know. It basically feels like the coldest place on earth. And then tomorrow, where everybody's just going to be basking in the
bare chested. Andy, you go bare-chested.
I'm working
on
my shirt on, I promise.
Mike Jansen. Mike, we'll check you out tonight on 9 o'clock news. Are you on any other time?
I will be on at 5 o'clock
five.
As well.
Thank you.
Yeah, so 5 and 9 o'clock tonight. I know we're getting to that time of year when it's hard to drag people indoors to come and turn on their TV. But you know what? The sun is down by 9 o'clock. So there's no sunshine.
Good point.
You guys will come inside and see what we got going on.
Good point. Thanks, Mike. Have a great weekend.
Great talking to you guys.
All right. Mike. That is Mike Jansen from WGN-TV, mid to high 70s tomorrow.
Take it.
Woo, pull out the tank top, Andy.
I'll take it. No,
shave that back up.
I'm going to be in here, though. You know, we've got
oh, that's
White
right.
Sox
yeah,
action
you'll tomorrow. Be working. That's too
it's
bad.
Okay.
We'll check bottom of the hour news coming up next. It's 720 WGN. McMurray in the Allstate Skyline Studios, along with Andy Mazur. I'm a homeowner. I worry about my lawn 24/7. Andy has no grass.
I worry about my lawn 7:24. 7 minutes and 24 seconds a day.
Listen, we're going to get you grass.
I know. I need it.
This is the man can help. He's recommended by Lou Manfredini right there.
Well, that's, you know, that's all I need to know.
You can go to TommyPolina.com. They're available in Mount Prospect. Joining us on the show is Joe Polina. Joe, thanks for coming on. How are you, buddy?
Well, how are you guys?
What are you working on today? You working on some lawns? Nobody's cutting grass yet, are they?
No, we're not cutting grass. We're going to start next week. Right now, we're still doing cleanups, which is something you should all be doing this time of the season, getting your lawn ready. You know, even the ones that don't have grass should probably get in the habit of doing this, because someday you will have grass.
Andy, huh?
Yeah, my front lawn looks like a junkyard.
I don't get it.
I don't either. It was all the stuff from the winter that kind of it rolls up onto my sidewalk and gets pushed onto my front lawn.
You have a rake?
Well, yeah, but I've been... Okay, go
Joe,
ahead.
Yeah, can I'm you good. Yell at him,
just
first
yell.
Of all, and
it's
just,
okay. I can
just
take
tell
it.
Him what he's doing wrong?
Everything. You're doing everything wrong,
yeah, everything.
First of all.
Yeah.
Go get a rake and a garbage can and some safety glasses, and let's get busy.
All right, I'm going to get busy.
That's it. That's all you have to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Joe, I told Andy this last year. I've never been to his house, but I know that the tree that is hovering over his front yard needs to be trimmed.
Yeah, you know, and I was going to call the city last year, and I think I just kind of let that
go. You got to pay for it. The city will take forever.
Okay.
Yeah, you do that, and depending on what kind of tree it is, you might not be careful when you do it, too.
Yeah.
I don't mean to beat you down,
yeah, it's
man,
okay.
But you just got
to
do
I'm
it.
I'm used to it. It's all good.
No, you're right. You know?
When he's right. I can't argue.
He's right, yeah.
Joe.
Yeah, and then the other thing also is you want to get somebody that's obviously an arborist that knows what to trim it. You know, for example, oaks.
Yeah.
Okay, you can't just be trimming oaks whenever you feel like it. You know, they have to be done when they're dormant. So, depending on what it is.
Yeah, because my I think it's, I'm not sure what kind of tree mine is, to be honest with you, but it's getting to the point where it's almost near the house on the second floor, and all those little helicopter things that come off of it, you know, are actually in my, they're in my gutters. Yeah, they're in my gutters.
If you say helicopter, then it's a silver maple. Silver maples are real fast growers, real tough trees. They're almost considered a weed. But if you're sitting in front of your house, chances are it's keeping your house cooler.
Yeah.
So a little trim job, and you can do those anytime.
Okay.
You know, it's going to bleed a little bit in the spring, but yeah, you know, it's good for the house. Yeah. And if you want to grow grass underneath it, it's easy too. All you got to do is grow some shade stuff.
Okay.
Find fescues and all that.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to, because it's that time of year where people start fertilizing and putting down grass seed, but we got to wait. I saw a guy that did it 2 weeks ago before the snow, and I'm thinking to myself, what is this guy doing? This is way too early. What's your advice, Joe?
My advice is that he did it fine, because it's just going to be dormant. The seed is not going to start germinating until the ground reaches a temperature of 55 degrees. So if he did it, you know, 2 weeks ago and it snowed on top of it, or if you do it today, it's still going to be dormant until it warms up a little bit. And, you know, and then it'll start coming up by itself. You know, the thing with seed, it's a little tricky, okay? So, for example, you got to prep the ground. You got to seed it. You got to top dress it. You just can't go get a bag of seed and just throw it and hope for the best. Because the wind's going to take it. The birds are going to take it. The water's going to take it. And then you're going to sit there and you're going to go, oh, look, I put all this money and nothing happened to it. So you got to prep it.
Joe, so when you say prep it, does that mean you got to take a hard rake and kind of move around the dirt a little bit so it'll sink in?
Absolutely. You know, you got to scratch the surface. You know, chances are everything is there. It's compacted. And there's a reason why you don't have grass in there. It's compacted there, or it's got too much shade, or you let it dry out last year, or they had diseases. You know, who knows, you know, what was on there. So you have to loosen up the area. You know, because you also, when the root system is established, you want some nice soft soil to hang on to. You know, it's like anything else. You got to do, the customer once told me, you got to put in a $5 plant in a $10 hole. In other words, you know, do the preparation, get it ready, and then it will thrive.
Let me ask you this. When you actually plant the grass seed and you put the topsoil on top of it, how often do you have to water it?
Great question.
You really want to know?
I do want to know, yes.
Believe it or not, it's twice a day for like 10 minutes. Because the thing is, you have to keep it moist. You can't let it dry out. If it dries out, the seed starts to germinate, and you lost it.
You're done.
So that's why seed is a little tricky. You know, that's why guys like me, we believe in sod. We believe in the green stuff. You roll it up, and boom, in 10 days, you got Wrigley Field or Comiskey.
Where do you buy your sod? Where do you get it?
We get it from a sod farm in Wisconsin. There's a local supplier in Des Plaines that brings it in fresh every day.
Okay.
So, you know, sod is very perishable. I mean, if you're lucky that you pick it up in the morning, you got to lay it by the afternoon. If depending on the time of season it is, maybe you pull it off the next day when it's cold. But, you know, it's something where I tell my customers this, if you have 3 hours of sunlight in the area, let's sod it. Because I can guarantee you, in 14 days, you have a perfect lawn. With seed, in 14 days, I can guarantee you, maybe you got an inch of growth.
God, I love that. That is, and sod is, it's really not that expensive, especially if you have a small area, because people waste so much time putting grass seed down. But when do you recommend grass seed, Joe? When do you recommend it?
The only time I recommend grass seed is if you have an area that's like really shady, where it doesn't have the 3 hours of sunlight or 2.5 hours of light the Kentucky bluegrass loves. That's the only area. And even in those areas, sometimes I try to sway my customers away from it. For example, instead of messing around with the seed all the time, because if it's a real shady, like I think the silver maple, you have to seed it in the spring, you have to seed it again in September. So unless you're a turfy, as we call them, then yes, go ahead and seed it. Otherwise, let's put in some ground cover. You know, put in some Pachycandra, some Vinca, you know, some annual, some color. You know, we don't want to be out there seeding all the time.
You don't. Why are you wasting your time? I like this guy.
That's what I was going to ask you. Because, you know, because on the common area near the street,
Parkway?
Whatever that thing's called. You know,
the common area.
The little area there by where you park.
It's like a coffee break area.
Exactly. I gave up and I mulched and I put some stones in there. It looked good, and you know it probably needs.
Does
to
it
be
look good
remote.
Or look?
Oh no,
great.
No, it looked really good.
Okay,
I did it myself.
You put mulch and stone in the same area?
Well, I put a couple of big stones, and then I mulched around it.
Okay,
Yeah.
I thought you had like a little.
No, there's no gravel. Yeah, I just just for decoration.
But yeah, and sometimes that's what happens. You know, I see a lot of parkways where people are just tired of messing around with grass, and they'll do like a mulch bed or put in a bunch of perennials or a lot of ground covers. You know, they'll do well, and it's a maintenance-free area, and you have to mess around with it again.
Okay, nice job. Okay. We're talking about Joe Polina. You can go to TommyPolina.com. It's available in, located in Mount Prospect, but you go just about anywhere. Can you take some phone calls, Joe? People have questions.
Sure.
All right, let's go to Steve in Evanston. Steve, what's your question for Joe Polina? Go ahead.
Hey, Pete, thanks for fitting me in. So, Joe, I have a weed that's called Creeping Charlie that's spread from my beds into my lawn, and it's I tried to get rid of it last year, but it's coming back this year. Is there anything I can do other than manually sitting there and trying to remove it all to get rid of it?
Yeah, don't sit manually. You'd just be wasting your time. You got to get the root system on it. Unfortunately, Creeping Charlie is very difficult to get rid of. The best time with any weed at all, especially clover and Creeping Charlie, is to hit them early in the spring with a herbicide. You know, and there's a lot of herbicides that will take care of that. I should say right on the back, you know, what they take care of as far as, you know, what weeds they kill. But definitely, you know, hit it in the spring. And on a worst case scenario, like if it's in your lawn, don't use Roundup. But if it's in an area where, you know, it's away from everything else, even go with something a little bit stronger, it will take care of it. But any weed killer will should be able to take care of it.
Got it.
Is it early enough to still take care of it, you think?
Yes. I mean, I honestly have seen some lawns now with dandelions and clover and then Creeping Charlie on it already. And when we start our maintenance program, not next week, the week after, we definitely go out and take care of the weeds right away, you know, before they get out of hand. Because, as a guy once told me that works for him at a big company, he goes, if you try spraying them in July, next spraying wet fruit, because nothing's going to happen.
Spraying wet fruit. Joe Polina on the line. Joe, I'm going to make you hold on because we have some more callers that want to talk to you, okay? I'm going to take a quick break. And what's your phone number if people want to call?
847-698-6868.
Or they can go to TommyPolina.com. Now, was Tommy your father?
Tommy's actually my middle name. When I started in 1982, Uncle Joe was still in business, so I kind of couldn't use their name.
So this is all you?
It's all me.
Been around since 1982. I love that. All right, we'll get back
to
Joe in a second. Quick break. It's 720 WGN. I'm going to live where the green grass grows, watching my corn pop up and rolls. Every night be tucked in close to your room. 720 WGN, Pete McMurray in the Allstate Skyline Studios. We're beating down Andy Mazur about his dirt lawn on the phone with us. Is Joe Polina. You can go to TommyPolina.com. They're available in the Northwest suburbs. Joe is answering questions. If you got a question for Joe, 312-981-7200. And I just totally spaced. I had so many questions for you, Joe. Give me a second to think about it. Joe, 847 area code, just got a text message. How do you feel about using the Red Dragon on Creeping Charlie, which was a weed? We were talking about this right before the break.
I'm not familiar with the Red Dragon.
You're not familiar with the Red Dragon?
No.
Okay. Got it.
Is it some sort of a herbicide or phosphate? What is it?
It says it burns the weeds, according to 847.
Burns the weeds.
I don't know about that.
If it burns the weeds, it burns everything else around it, too. So I probably would say no.
You don't want that. I know what I wanted to ask you. How often should you fertilize? You're going to do fertilizer and seed right now in the spring. Do you do it once a month, once a quarter? How often?
Well, that really depends how big of a turfy you are. I mean, there's a lot of people that I know they fertilize, you know, four or five times a year. But you know, it could do more, but as long as you go with a little lighter nitrogen. Okay. The rule of thumb is about 4 to 5 times a year, basically around every 8 weeks. And, you know, in the spring, you want to use them all with the, provided you're not seeding, of course, you use the one with the crabgrass pre-emergent. Mm-hmm. Second and the third one, you want to use the one with the herbicides that takes care of some weeds. And the last one is a winterizer that basically will feed your root system. That's why in the spring, you know, it pops up real nice and green and everything else. So 4 to 5 times is probably what I recommend. You know, if you're residential, I probably would do 5. If you're commercial, I probably would do 4.
Okay. I live in the city, and my front yard's the size of your master bath.
four times a year should be plenty. You know what else you could do that it's really convenient? Because everybody likes the green grass.
Yeah.
And actually, Lou and I were talking about this one day, and what I recommend my homeowner is use the Emulsionite, I don't know if I can say the name, with iron. And that'll give you the nice green that you're looking for without burning the grass. If you're not accustomed to put down fertilizer.
Absolutely. Go. You can say the name. What is it?
Mulorganite.
Mulorganite is.
Yes, it's a natural fertilizer that has 2% iron, only 6% nitrogen. So no matter how hard you try, you can't burn it. Well, I shouldn't go that far, but it's very difficult to burn.
Now, is this...
But the 2% would give you nice green grass.
Is this the stuff from the Milwaukee area?
Mm-hmm.
This is the... From... what is it? It's the waste from the Milwaukee area.
Yes, it is.
I was just going to ask you about that. Lou recommended this fertilizer about 4 years ago to me. I use it every single year. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's it, because Lou loves it. I think his comment was, you can sit there and hear it grow, I think he said.
He also recommends Jonathan Green Black Beauty Grass Seed, which I have used in shady areas, and it works great. It does.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, the seed is always, in a shade, is always a challenge. And again, it depends if you're a guy that says, I got to have grass here, I don't care, what do I got to do?
I do.
Then yes, go ahead and reseed it.
I'm that guy. I'm the nutball.
You're the guy.
Mike, what's your question for Joe Polina? Go ahead. We're talking landscaping.
Is this me?
Yeah, Mike, go ahead. Mike from Byron.
I just had a quick comment on, you ever heard of plugs called Zoysia?
Zoysia, yes.
And I've used grass. I've used that in shaded areas, and it works great. I mean, it's like little pieces of sod.
Yeah, it's Zoysia is a warm weather grass. It'll go further, a different climate zone than we are. That's the one where you drive by in the spring, and you go, oh, my God, look at that. The grass is dead. Or September. It basically goes dormant because it does not like the cold temperatures, but it's got an aggressive root system, and it basically just chokes everything else out of the way. But in the spring and the fall, it doesn't look too pretty like bluegrass does.
Okay, so it works, but it doesn't look good in the spring and the fall.
No.
What about the grass seed that you roll out and it looks green as you're rolling it out? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, that's great because, as I said earlier, you have to cover and you have to keep moisture on it. And then what that does also is retains moisture, plus it's got some fertilizers in it as well, and that helps the germination process.
Okay.
So that's also good, if you're trying to get something started. And it's also good on areas that are sloped because it helps with the erosion.
God, I love that I have your cell phone number now, Joe. This is great. 312-981-7200. Let's go to Susan in Beecher. Susan, what's your question for Joe Polina? Go ahead.
Hey, hi. I have a pear tree, and I just wondered if there was something I could see to keep it from bearing fruit.
A pear tree that you don't want to bear pears?
No, and I don't want to cut it down. I know that would solve the problem, but it's a nice shaped tree. It's a nice shed, but the pears are just, there's more pears than anybody could eat. I have 500-600 pears.
I'm having a difficult time hearing her, but I think she said a pear tree, she doesn't want it to bear fruit. Is that it?
You don't want it to bear fruit. Is that right, Susan? Yes.
Right, right. Is there something I can feed it?
Is there anything that she can do to the tree?
Not as far as I know. I mean, except, taking it out. I mean, I really can't. There's an ornamental. You might want to consider replacing it with an ornamental pear. There's a couple. There's one called a Chanticleer. There's one Aristocrat. Ornamental fruit. It has white flowers in the spring, great fall color. It doesn't bear fruit. How about that for an alternative?
Okay. All right. Let's do one more. Let's go to Judy in McHenry. Judy, you're on with Joe Polina. What's your question?
Hi. I'm so glad you're there today. We have a backyard that has a perimeter of a lot of trees. The inside, there aren't trees, but we have a lot of shade. And we can't grow grass. We have a lot of this viney stuff that grows in the yard that has tiny little what looks like strawberries. When it comes to fruit, it's like a vine across the yard.
Hmm. Okay. Well, so you want to grow grass?
Yes.
Okay.
And you have a lot of shade, you said, right?
Yes.
Okay. Underneath a lot of trees.
I would call it partial.
Partial. Well, if you have partial, it's even better. How many hours of sunlight would you say it has?
How much sunlight?
Pardon me?
How much sunlight, Judy? How much does it get?
Well, it's on the east side of the house, the backyard.
Good morning.
And so there's some, and right now it looks like there's, you know, some sunlight out there, but once everything leaves out, it's going to be more shade than sun.
Okay, so you have to go with the shade seed. So the first thing I would do is get rid of the wild strawberries, and obviously for that you need a herbicide. Okay, get rid of that first. Now, the one nice thing about the shade is that you don't have a time restriction as to when you can see. Because, you know, a lot of times if you see in the sun, you're worried about crabgrass and everything else. In the shade, you don't have that problem. So I would get rid of the, if they, you were my client, I would get rid of the strawberries first and come down with the herbicide and take care of it. And if it's a lot, you might want to consider hiring out, you know, to one of these spray companies. They do a great job, and it's a lot easier for you. And then after that, you know, do the seeding. You know, then again, do the prep the soil, seed it, top dress it, put a triple 10 or triple 14 on it, you know, to help the root system, and just keep it moist. And you have, you know, you have grass.
I love it. Thank you, Judy. One last question from texter to Tommy. How do you get rid of thistles from the front yard? What are thistles?
Oh, thistle's easy.
What's a thistle?
Thistle, it comes, it's got, it got thorns on it. You touch it and you go, ah. Now, it actually looks pretty cool. It's got a blue flower up on top.
Okay.
And you probably see a lot in dry flower arrangements. It's basically a weed.
Okay.
It's probably about 3 feet tall when it comes up. That's, you can get rid of that with anything over the counter, a herbicide. Just spray it on there and it'll shrivel up and go away.
That's it. That's easy.
Yeah.
Joe, you're the best, man. We're going to have you back on again. You're great.
Well, thank you. I hope I can be of some help.
By the way, highly recommended from Lou Manfredini. And I sent Lou a text earlier today. I'm like, who's your guy? And he's like, you got to call up Joe Polina. And here you are.
Well, I have to thank him. I do what I can, you know, to try to make it, you know, the game look nice.
TommyPolina.com is Joe's website. Joe, have a great weekend. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, guys. You do the same.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Great Bye-bye. Stuff. Andy, what have you learned?
I've learned that I'm doing everything wrong.
You're gonna. I promise you, I will come to your house in the next 2 weeks. I just want to look at your yard.
Yeah, you don't know. It's like straightening up before the cleaning person comes in. That's what I have to do.
Pete McMurray in the Allstate Skyline Studios. The White Sox rained out today. That's why we're on until 4 o'clock. Andy Mazur's here.
Usually I'm here.
Doing the pre and post.
Yeah, I was doing the getting ready for the pregame today when we got word that the game was canceled.
So, can you use that pregame tomorrow?
Some of it, yeah, will last the test of time. But you know, we like to treat our listeners to the most up to date current information. So we'll make that a fluid situation.
312-981-7200 is our phone number. Let's bring up our good friend. She is a career coach and spiritual guide. It is Gina Murata. And before you say anything, I want to say thank you because you sent something, I think it was either this week or last week, my three pieces of career advice in Oprah's new book. And I'm not kidding when I say this, Gina. I've sent it to 10 different people.
Oh, Pete, that's amazing.
Including our mutual friend, Jane, who didn't open your email that day.
How do you know she didn't open it?
Because I sent it to her and she's like, oh my God, where did you get this? I go, these are Gina's emails. So by the way, if people go to your website, you send free advice out on a regular basis.
I do. Every Tuesday, I have a blog that I publish, and it's called Love Your Work Weekly. And so you can subscribe on my website, and you'll get it in your inbox.
Okay, and that's what I got, the three pieces of career advice in Oprah's new book, so I don't have to read Oprah's new book, which is nice.
Nope, you've got my top advice covered.
You know, can I go through the top three? People are probably wondering. Number one, when you're ready, the universe organizes to help you get on your path. Do you want to explain?
Yes.
You want to explain that real quick?
I do, yes. And I really, the audience I was speaking to here and what Oprah's new book is speaking to here is someone who might not have a sense of their direction. And their, you know, her book is called The Path Made Clear. And so the idea is when you make that declaration, I want to get clarity, right? Because before you do that, you're living in a state of, like, let's say, chaos, confusion, burnout, struggle. But then you reach a point and you say, I actually want to get clear. I actually want to discover my dream, or I have a sense of my dream, and I want to move in this direction. Once you get that, once you say that, the universe organizes to support you to get what you need. In other words, we do not live in a vacuum. You know, we live in a human society with nature around us, people around us, and so when you declare something with clarity, the environment around you responds. People will show up that can help you with what you need.
Yep.
You know, I just talked to someone yesterday who said she's been trying to find a coach for about a year. And she said, I don't know why, but I just found you on Google last week. Right? Like, why didn't she find me a year ago? Time wasn't right for her. So
right.
Once you're ready, once you declare it, things will come to you.
I usually say when your radar's up, when you make that decision and your radar's up, you're going to notice certain things, or things are going to fall in your lap that you didn't notice before. Does that make sense?
That's right. Yes, absolutely, because you just were shut down to it before, and now you're open and you're looking.
This is how I, here's my analogy for people that are listening right now. It's like when you buy a brand new car. You don't see that car anywhere else, but once you have that car, you notice it everywhere.
That's right, because your attention's on it. Exactly.
Right. How about that? Number two, you have natural raw talent and can use it to get on your path right now.
That's right. Okay. So most people who are looking to shift their career to be more purposeful, they know that there's a path I want to get on that I'm not on right now. Most people tend to have this belief that they may need more schooling or something to help them get on the path. But the reality is your true path and your purpose, there's raw, natural talent you were born with. Oprah gives some great examples of this in her book of some people she's interviewed. Like, for example, Nate Berkus. He's pretty well known in Chicago. He's an interior designer. He did a show from Chicago on interior design, one of Oprah's, you know, stars that she plucked out and saw a lot of talent in. And he talks about when he was a child, how he was very sensitive to the spaces around him. Like, he had to share a room with his brother, and this was a huge struggle, and his mom saw it, and he lit up when he could, like, organize his space and put it the way he wanted it. So that's just the way it works for all of us. There's a natural talent within that we all have that we don't need someone to teach us, and that's what your path is about, that natural raw talent.
Three pieces of career advice in Oprah's new book. So number three is you don't need to know how your whole path will unfold to get started. Most people have to have everything together, or it becomes too overwhelming. They just need to get started, don't they?
Yes. Yes. You know, if you're looking for a big purpose and a big destiny, if that's what you feel in your heart, there's a bigger dream that you hold, people get intimidated by that. Like, oh, how am I going to get that done? How am I going to ever publish a book? How am I going to ever get that kind of job? How am I going to ever start my own business? I hear people say these things all the time.
Yeah, we all do it, man. I do it, too.
Yeah. And the truth is, if you know in your heart it's your destiny, the universe opens up to help you get there.
Okay.
So you don't need to know how. You just need to know that, yes, this is what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Understand why you want to do that. Like find your true purpose for it. And then just take the next one, two, three steps. That's all you need to know.
All right. We're talking with life coach Gina Murata. Now, there's people listening right now that are struggling with their job, struggling with relationships. What's the first thing that they could kind of do to get started? Is there something that they can do? Because we all have problems. We all want to do better at our job. Andy's shaking his head. We want to be better in our relationship. I've been married 17 years. I can be a better husband. Is there something that we can do personally? Like, I don't know. Do we look at ourselves? Do we write something down? You're the career coach. You're the life guy. You tell us. Or is that too loaded of a question?
So just be more specific. Is it like, hey, I want to be a better person in a certain area, career or life? Is that the question?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What's the first thing you could do to make an improvement?
I guess.
Go ahead.
It's too general of a question. I mean, if people want to take the next step, let's talk career first of all.
Okay.
Let's talk about moving forward in your career.
Yes.
How do you improve your career? Let's start there. For a person that wants a new job or wants to do better at their career right now, what would you tell them?
Yes. Well, the most important thing in the heart of my thought leadership and the work that I do, I would say, is understand what is your genius. What is your magic within you that you have to bring to the world? And your genius is comprised of three things. It is your natural talent, which we talked about just a moment ago. You were born with it. Nobody could teach it to you. The second piece is experience. So if you're in your career for a period of time, and even if you've done work that you don't like that much, you've learned from it, and that has given you some experience in an industry or with some, you've developed some skill sets. And then the third piece is passion. Like, what do you get excited about? I was trained in accounting in college, and I got to say, honestly, accounting never excited me, so I never built a career around that.
So wait a second. You started out as an accountant, and then you became an attorney, and you quit that to become a career coach.
Well, sort of. So I was an accountant student. I was an accounting student in college, and by the time I was getting ready to graduate, I knew accounting wasn't for me, although I got into law because a law firm hired me while I was a college student to do accounting work for them. And so that was my entree into the legal field, which seemed just more interesting.
Okay. I like that. I mean, yeah. I've been in jobs where you get beat down by your manager, where your self-esteem is in the toilet, and you start questioning your confidence, thinking to yourself, maybe I'm not that good.
I've got something you might not like that I'm going to say about that.
Go ahead.
Okay. So when you're in a situation that someone is being really critical of you, now, I do not want anyone to be in that situation long term, but often what I see is that, you know, from a spiritual perspective, the people that show up in our lives are mirrors for us. They show us what's inside of us that we're struggling with. And so if someone is there giving you a lot of criticism, what they're really showing you is that you are inside yourself criticizing yourself, and you don't have the confidence that you need to get to the next place yet.
So how do you confront those people? Or how do you respond to those people? Because I've worked for, and just take me for an example, and Andy, you may have been in this situation, because people in media, sometimes you run into a boss that is the lowest common denominator, where they're a narcissist and they only care about themselves. I don't know how it is in other industries, but it seems like they all fall into radio. Not here at WGN, thank God, but other stations.
They're in many professions. They are in many professions, the type of person you're
now,
talking
I've,
about,
I've read about narcissists. If you confront a narcissist, they will use all their powers and their energies to beat you down.
So what do you do
in that situation?
Well, there's many layers in terms of answering that question. I mean, the first thing is what I said, is if someone is treating you poorly and you're in that situation and you're allowing it, okay, the first thing is to understand that there's some reflection of you thinking poorly of yourself, or you wouldn't allow them to talk to you that way. Now, if you're beyond that, right, if you're beyond that and you're like, this person can't talk to me this way, then it's about being assertive with that person, not aggressive, but drawing clear boundaries of pointing out, you're talking to me in this way, you're saying these things that feel harsh, and you just put up the boundary and say, I can't communicate with you in this way. Or you say, you know, this is something that I'm struggling with and I'd like to talk to you about. If it's not something you'll talk to me about, then you say, I'm going to go to the next level person and talk to that next level person. If ultimately you're in an environment where that behavior is allowed and it's not going to be... it's not going to be quelled or some kind of response to it, then you're in the wrong environment for you, right?
So you have to switch environments.
Let me also say this. So I used to be that kind of a manager.
What?
I know this may surprise you, Peach. I know.
You're kidding.
I know.
You're one of the nicest people I've ever met, and you're always encouraging and motivating and pumping people up. You're kidding.
Yes, this is true, because when I first became a leader in business, I had no leadership training, and I was very hard on myself, therefore I was very hard on my staff.
Wow.
And so, I'm an example of someone who, my staff started going bigger than me and complaining, and then I was told, ultimately, this behavior has to change because it's not part of our culture. And then I changed. Like, I had to take it upon myself. But that is a matter of, you know, people spoke up to say, I feel mistreated here. And once I heard it, I didn't hear it at first. I was told it many times before I actually heard it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I listened and I transformed. I went through training. I did all kinds of things to learn why I was behaving that way and how to turn it around.
Interesting.
So I know that's shocking.
Wow. I mean, Andy, you know Gina. That is a shocker.
That came out of left field, Gina, I got to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
That came way out of left field.
Man, I'm going to have I can't wait to see her.
I also have to say, because leadership, in like sort of an older school style leadership, was about being harsh and tough.
Oh, yeah.
And that doesn't work for a lot of people right now, especially creative people, right? You're talking about people in the media. You get a lot of journalists and radio personalities and TV personalities. These are creative people that are more sensitive than others, because that's how creativity flows, is by being a sensitive person. And that more harsh leadership style, that old school leadership style, just it doesn't work in the modern world, because now there is a different style of leadership out there that's compassionate and loving, and helps to bring out the genius in others. And that's the direction we're moving. But not every environment has those kinds of leaders. Or you might have a great place to work, but one of those leaders is sort of there and nobody's speaking up about it.
Right. Okay. We're talking with Gina Marotta. Gina Marotta, MarotTA.com. And she has, if you go to her blog, she has all of this on her blog, including the three pieces of career advice in Oprah's new book. I'm going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want you to give people advice on switching jobs. Can we do that?
Great.
Okay.
Yes.
And okay. Again, you can go to Gina's website if you'd like to email her or have her as your career coach, GinaMarotta.com. It's 720 WGN. She's a career coach and spiritual guide. You can go to her website, Gina Marotta, MarotTA.com, and she joins us again. Gina, I want to mention that you gave Andy some career advice.
Yeah, we had a nice chat. Gina and I had a long chat, and I got to be honest, you know, the listening skills that she has, amazing, and asks the right questions.
See, I can never be in her job because just listening to people's problems, it would drive me crazy.
But it was more of a conversation, wasn't it, Gina? I mean, it was more, we were just kind of,
yes,
back and forth.
Yes, fair to say. You know, it's funny. It's the legal training that I had as a lawyer. You know, you really have to listen and understand what problems are people facing. Like, if people have a lot of, like, oh, this is happening, and that is happening, and this is happening, I'm able to just kind of pinpoint, all right, here's the real issue.
Okay.
This is what we need to focus on.
Yeah, and not to give too much away because it's a little personal, but, you know, I had a couple of things I was doing. I was doing some teaching. Still am doing a little bit of that. And I was wondering, you know, from Gina's perspective, you know, what was going on. I was getting a little frustrated with some of the students because, for whatever reason. And we discovered a commonality in that whole thing and helped me kind of work through that.
Yeah. So great. I mean, it's very fluid when I work with anyone. I'm listening and I'm sort of a mirror for them, what's going on inside of them. And I'm also very intuitive. This is the spiritual guide part of my work. I can just kind of pinpoint, like, would this help? Or let's try this exercise. And people get to clarity and feel better. I'm just truly blessed to be able to do this work.
Yeah. So I guess what I would say is, if someone is, you know, trying to decide whether or not they should speak what they're feeling inside to try to make themselves feel better, I would say, yeah, go ahead and do it. There's no stigma attached to that at all. Because
we all internalize it, man.
You know?
We all do. And it builds up. You got to get it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And we don't realize it until we speak it.
Right. And then you figure it out when you say it out loud. Well, Gina, before we have to go into news, I wanted to talk about switching jobs. What's the first step that people should take if they're thinking about switching jobs, switching careers, moving on to the next step?
Yeah. So, you know, we mentioned this in the earlier segment. It's really discovering what is your genius and what is that pointing to. You know, we evolve in our careers over time. Where we were in our 20s is going to be different than our 30s, 40s, 50s. And so we have to reevaluate every somewhere between, you know, 2 to 5 to 7 years what it is that we really want to do next. And so taking that deep dive inquiry, what is my genius, what is it pointing to, and then having that be expressed in writing somewhere, right? Whether you use your LinkedIn page, whether you have a web page of your, you know, featuring your work that has a professional bio. I'm not a huge fan of resumes because I think like something like a bio is way better, but most, you know, jobs will want to see
right.
a resume. But something in writing that communicates who you really are. And I would say this, I'm also not a fan of like going out and trying to get like trying to apply for 10, 20 jobs, whatever looks good. I say only find the ones that are truly speaking to your heart, to what you really want to do, and focus on one or two, and that's it. Give your whole heart to it. Be unique. Stand out. Find out what are your connections that you have that know somebody in that company. How can you go get a lunch meeting with somebody or send somebody a personalized note or package just to let them know who you are? Get your resume on top of their pile and really put your effort in where you want to be.
Isn't it true that 90% of people that get jobs, they know someone within the company?
Absolutely. You know, whether they're in the company or somehow connected to the company.
Or associated somehow.
Personal connections make a big difference, especially at least to get you an interview. Some companies now, if it's a real big company, are using these more like word search mechanisms to just go through resumes rather than somebody reading them. So you might get missed, even if you had something really good, because you weren't in the right word search. So having someone that's inside that company to say, hey, take a look at this person. I mean, when I get those phone calls, when I've gotten those phone calls in the past, I always, okay, great. If it's somebody that is meaningful to me, that I trust,
right.
I'm going to make sure I at least have them.
I think we've all done that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
If someone calls you up and says,
yeah.
hey, can you talk to so-and-so or take a look at this?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to say? Of course
yeah.
you're going to say yes. Gina, you're the best. Thank you for taking time
Aww.
Out on this Saturday. We appreciate it.
Oh, and blessings to the White Sox. We're hoping they're resting today.
They're resting, yes.
So that they can be really great at their job.
Blessings to the White Sox. I love that. GinaMarotta.com, MarotTA.com. Please, if you go to her website, check out her blog. She's got some great stuff that she sends out. Gina, we'll talk soon. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Bye, guys.
Yeah. All right, take care. She is the absolute best. And you loved getting advice from her.
I tell you, it was a conversation that lasted a little over an hour,
mm-hmm.
and I looked down on my watch, and I'm like, whoa, I can't believe it's already been an hour and 10 minutes. We were just talking about things. It wasn't even like a cleansing, so to speak. It was just
right.
more like, okay, this is what I'm feeling. I don't know why I'm feeling this way. Tell me why I'm feeling this way.
Right.
And she did.
Or you get clarity.
Clarity. And you know what really came out of it, to be honest with you, was I had a couple different directions that I was trying to go to just kind of make myself feel like I was whole, right?
Right.
I love doing what I do here. And that came out in what we talked about. The other things I was doing were just kind of to keep busy. This was the passion. And that's why I stuck with it.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, she helped me out a lot.
All right, quick break. We'll check news next. It's 720 WGN. Ever going to the old post office?
No, I've only driven under.
On the Eisenhower?
Yeah, never been in.
I've never been inside that building. Read a great article in the Tribune this week from Ryan Ory from the Chicago Tribune. It's about the old post office, which a lot of people don't know because it closed years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But you still hear traffic reports from,
right,
the, old
from the old
post office
right.
to Mannheim.
To 53rd.
Right. 312-981-7200 is our phone number, and joining us right now is Ryan Ory from the Chicago Tribune. How you doing, man?
Doing great.
I never thought the old post office would be converted into a type of building, because when did it close? What year was it?
It was, I think, 96 or 97. It's been more than 2 decades, just over
yeah.
2 decades.
That's crazy. I mean,
yeah.
that was before I moved here. But, you know, thank God I have family in Chicago, because that was a big deal when you drive under the old post office.
Yeah. Everybody knows the building, even though it's been closed that long and not that many people you know, around have probably been in it any time in the last couple of decades. But everybody knows what it is.
You hear that someone bought the building and they were trying to find financing. I mean, it fell through and fell through and fell through. And finally, what happened a few years ago? Someone bought the building and they finally were able to convert it. What was the turning point, Ryan? Do you know?
Yeah, well, it's a very long story, but basically it was, for a while it was owned by this very eccentric British investor.
That's right, yes.
And he never did anything with it, and then, he had kind of very grand plans, but never really had any success in being able to get things close to starting. And he sold the building to the group that owns it now, and almost simultaneously, he died, like within about a day.
Wow.
So a few years ago, this group, 601W Companies out of New York, bought the building, and they had this vision that they would turn it into offices. And, they're in the middle of they're close to completing a more than $800 million project to, make this huge building into modern offices and with some other things in it as well for like some retail on the ground floor. It was one of those buildings I think a lot of people thought had great potential because it's so unusual. There's nothing else like it, but it's also,
right.
It's also not an easy thing to do. It's just so huge. And it was sat vacant for, as we said, more than two decades. And needed a lot of work just to clean it all out. And, they were hauling, literally tons of debris out of the building. And one of the unusual attributes of the building is because it's so big, you can land helicopters on top of the building. And so they were taking these basically barges or barge-sized containers that they were filling with all this debris, and then they were using helicopters to drop it down onto the river and haul it away. So,
oh wow, I didn't know that. So, I mean, a lot of people think this building is kind of an eyesore.
Yeah, I don't know. Some people don't like it. I think it's. I like it. I mean, it's very unique, and
it's a Chicago landmark.
It's one of the few buildings anywhere I know of that you can, literally drive through the building. A lot of people do. I mean, every day they pass right through the middle of the building where,
right.
Cut out for the feeder ramp under the expressways. And so,
was that a thing? When was this building built? Because was that a thing back in the day where you could drive underneath the building? Hey guys, I got a great idea. Let's, one of the main thoroughfares into the city. Let's build a building over it, over the main artery. Great idea.
The building was actually built in several different phases. It's actually, I think, four different buildings that were built on at different times. But the end result is it's 2.8 million square feet, and it's a huge building. And one of the other unusual attributes.
Now, hold on a second. You're going over that too fast. 2.8 million square feet.
Yeah.
This building is enormous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. To give you some perspective of how big the footprint of the building is, they're converting the roof to a 3.5 acre park. So that's like the amount of land that it takes up. So it'd be a full, functioning park on top for people who are tenants in the building or whatever, with basically a track around the outside of it and places to like play basketball and green areas and things like that.
That is smart.
So, yeah. So it's you're talking about driving through the building. The other thing that's unusual about the way the building was built was, it's a portion of the building is basically ramps. So they used to, semis would drive in with full loads of mail or whatever, and basically drive into and through the building, and they would drive it up on these ramps and unload everything, and then they drive back down the ramps. So it's just a very unusual type of building that you'd never see built, in the modern era.
Right. Andy?
Yeah, the location of it and the fact that you can drive underneath it and the fact that it's so huge, is that what makes it so desirable for not only the developers, but future tenants?
Yeah, I think, there is the visibility and, there's definitely a curiosity factor too. So I think if you're a company and you say, we're moving our office there, you want to come in for an interview, whatever. I mean, there's got to be at least something to be said for, somebody wanting to say, I just want to see what it looks like at least. But the other thing that the building has that makes this a really well-timed project is in the last several years, there's been a trend toward, particularly like for tech companies and other creative tech companies to have really, to go into these really large floor plates that are designed very wide open, where you can have hundreds or even thousands of employees on the same floor together.
Oh, yeah.
And so, these buildings have floors that are more than 200,000 square feet. So, it's like having, like maybe eight floors of a normal office building is one floor. And so that makes it unusual. And, built the widest buildings in Chicago have done really well in the last few years for offices. The Merchandise Mart used to be seen as kind of this dingy old building, and it became a very hot place to put offices. And there's other examples, but it's just you can't. There's very few places where you can put that many people on one big floor and have everybody working together.
It's so true. I worked in the Merchandise Mart before the renovation, and I have to say it was a dump.
Me too. Yeah.
It was, and I'm like, oh my god, when are they going to renovate this thing? And I would run into that's before Chris Kennedy ran for mayor. I'm sorry, for governor, and he would just walk through the halls and it's like, hey, there's Chris Kennedy over there. He's running the Merchandise Mart. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can get some new wallpaper up or fresh coat of paint. Maybe we can do something with that. We're talking.
That family owned that. The Kennedys owned that building for many years and still owns the land alongside there where they're doing some new development.
Of course they do. Yes. We're talking with Ryan Ory from the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about the old post office, which is right at the end of the Eisenhower. Yeah,
Congress.
The Jane Byrne, mm-hmm. right there. On Congress Parkway. So what is actually going in the building? I know there's going to be offices, but for the common folk like us or people coming in from the suburbs, is there something that we can take advantage of?
Yeah, so most of the floors are going to be offices and areas, just to be used by tenants. But the main floor, the ground floor, they're planning to have a large food hall and some other retail. And there's a big plaza that kind of opens from the base of the building out onto the river, and they're renovating that. Right now it just kind of looks like a, just kind of a flat, almost like a big parking lot or something. But they're
speaking of parking lot, is there going to be parking there, by the way?
I'm trying to recall. I think there's a very small amount of parking that's in the building.
There's three spaces but good luck parking on Van Buren on the street.
But they also have some, the owner also has some properties nearby where they could put parking. But I think one of the other reasons that as far as like why would tenants be interested is, it's extremely close to Union Station, and you can get there by a lot of different train lines and so on. And a lot of companies in recent years have really de-emphasized the ability to park places, and it's all, just be close to transportation. And some companies, if they have most of their employees are in the city, they just figure out what's close to CTA trains.
That makes sense.
If they have people who are suburbs and city, they try to figure out where can I be close to CTA trains and the Metra, whatever. But, it just seems like for these downtown office deals, there's a big de-emphasis on like how many parking spaces are there. I'm not to say people don't drive anymore. Certainly they do, but
it's all about public transportation.
High priority.
Yes,
yeah.
All about public transportation. But something that got my eye, and Andy, you'll like this, the Plan Telegram Lounge. So there's going to be a bar in this place.
I think that's one of the, I believe that might be one of the features that's just for the tenants.
Oh,
but I'm sure that on the ground floor, when they do all the retail and it's going to be an extremely large space for a food hall, and I'm sure they'll have bars and multiple different kinds of food. And so that outdoor area that along the river, they're envisioning that being a place where people working in the building, but also people not working in the building will come and get food from one of the several food hall vendors there.
Sure.
Take the food outside, sit along the river and eat. And it seems like it'd be a pretty good setting for that to work. And, you know, starting in with the built-in advantage of having several thousand people working in the building itself, and then it's near a bunch of other large buildings.
You build it, they will come. Absolutely. Right. Yeah.
Do you know if, obviously it used to be a post office. I mean, is there going to be any remnants of that? I mean, the bar's name, you know, kind of harkens back to the telegraph. I guess the post office is kind of involved there. Will there be any of that integrity left in it anywhere?
They are, you know, I've had a chance to go walk through the, you know, kind of the raw space very early on a couple different times, and they are preserving certain elements of what had been there. I think at least one of the old vaults is going to be used in one of the, I think maybe one of the retail spaces or the lobby or something like that.
Your mail's probably in there.
There's these old chutes that they used to send mail down, and old, like, heavy-duty scales that they used to weigh, that, you know.
Your Bozo postcard is on one of those slides, yes.
So some of those elements are being preserved, you know, a lot of it, you know, during the course of the buildings, you know, sitting, you know, vacant for 20 some years, it suffers, you know, sustained some damage, and there was a lot of work that had to be done. But they are making an effort to preserve some of the things that remind you that it was a massive post office at one time. I think it's the world's the largest post office built in the world is what it's at least the claim.
It's got to be. Ryan Ory, I posted the article on Facebook. I really enjoyed the article, and thank you for coming on. And just to let people know, the old post office right there on Congress Parkway, the end of the Eisenhower, Jane Byrne area, 2.8 million square feet. We forget how big this building is. A 3.5 acre park in the food hall that you were talking about, and it's in your article, 40,000 square feet is the food hall. This place is enormous. We forget about that. Yeah. And you can drive underneath it. How many lanes? Is it six or eight?
I think it's four each way, yeah.
Yeah, so eight. Yeah, eight lanes of traffic underneath. We forget, you know, living here every day, going through the motions. We drive under that puppy and we just forget. Ryan, thanks for coming on, man. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Right. Thanks, man. Great stuff. Check out that article. It's on my Facebook page on Facebook. Thanks again to Ryan Ory. That article is on Facebook. It posted at 2.8 million square feet, the old post office.
That's a lot of square feet.
It's a bummer about the Telegram Lounge. He's right. It's only for tenants. But you can go through the pictures, and they show that 3.5-acre park on, you know, an artist rendering on the roof of the old post office. It's huge, man. Just enormous. Most recognizable buildings in Chicago, the old post office, even though it's kind of an ugly building.
Yeah, I'd say that's one of them.
Wrigley Building?
Yeah, I'd say Wrigley Building. Wrigley Field. Is that a building?
It's a field. It's a stadium.
How about the water tower?
Yep.
Is it a building or is it just a structure?
No, it's a building. Okay. Yeah. Willis Tower, John Hancock, of course.
I've got Merchandise Mart on my list.
Merchandise Mart.
Yeah.
Did you work in the Mart?
I did. 15th floor.
Was it pre-renovation?
Yes.
I'm telling you right now. If you worked in the Mart back in the day.
It was scary.
Have you seen it lately?
I have not.
It is beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a huge bar right when you walk in, a common area where people can eat. They have restaurants all over on that that main floor. It took them forever to do it.
The only thing I remember is you couldn't get there from here. It was one of those things where you walked in the door over there by the river, on the riverside.
Yep.
And you had to take an elevator no matter where because there was no stairs and no escalators.
Right.
And then you could take the escalator to the second floor. But then you couldn't get back down.
You couldn't take it down. You had to take the stairs down.
Wait a minute. What's going on here?
It was the weirdest thing.
It was very strangely set up.
The Merchandise Mart is so big it has its own zip code.
Yeah, it does. World's largest office building, right?
How many city blocks?
It's a lot.
Is it eight? Five or eight? Something like that?
I had Adler Planetarium on my list, too. That's a pretty recognizable building.
Okay. I can see that. Yeah. How about the Trump building?
You can recognize that.
Even, you know, take Trump out of it. It's very recognizable, and you got the spire and the whole deal. Ben, you had one?
Marina Towers.
Marina Towers. That's Chicago right there. How do we forget Marina Towers? The honeycombs, man.
That's beautiful.
That's it right there. Every iconic picture down the river, Marina Towers.
The Bob Newhart Show open. Yeah, right by the Marina Towers. Yeah.
Steve McQueen at the end of the movie, whatever movie that was, where the car went right in the river. Bullet. You're right. Yeah. What are your favorite buildings?
You know, I'm a big fan of the Hancock Building for personal reasons. My grandmother used to work in the department store that was below it. It was called Bonwit Tellers.
Really?
Yeah, she worked in the jewelry department there, and we used to go visit her all the time. And it was just
you're kidding.
No, it was really cool. It was like a field trip to go to the city because we lived in the burbs.
Okay.
And it was just fun to be in that building. I've always liked that building because of how much time I spent there as a kid.
All right.
Yeah.
I got you.
I loved the Tribune Tower when we were over there.
Tribune Tower is a beautiful
building. Lobby itself was just worth going
iconic.
To see. And that
Did you take any pictures?
I took a ton of pictures before we left.
Well, you're a photographer. I think I maybe took one.
I took pictures from every angle. I went down the hallway by where the food area was, and I don't know what they're doing with it now. I mean, I look across the river
Condos,
here, and it looks like they're ripping it apart, it looks like, and that's a shame.
What about the facade? Because they had different rocks from all over the world. Yeah. That was the thing.
Things that
rocks,
are
bricks.
Into the walls, yeah.
Like there was a moon rock and it was labeled. And on the inside, if people have never been inside Tribune Tower.
All the quotes from famous people about...
the beautiful marble on the walls and quotes everywhere in the lobby.
The huge
it was
clock.
Gorgeous.
The clock and the map behind the security desk there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I put the Sears Tower as one of my favorites, too, just because I love the shape of it. And it's just, you're driving into the city, and you look at it, and you can see it.
The Wrigley Building would be my number one.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. That's all Chicago. And Marina Towers would be number two. I forgot all about it. Because you don't go into Marina Towers.
No, but you know, now with the Riverwalk, you get exposed to it a lot more than you used to, because you can actually walk on the other side right by it, and you're underneath, and you get that really interesting view of it. And again, my photographer's eye, I've taken a lot of pictures of it from down on the Riverwalk, and it just looks amazing, especially at night, too.
If people haven't come in from the suburbs lately and hung out downtown, we have a brand new Riverwalk over the last few years,
which
is underneath Wacker Drive.
Yeah.
And you can walk along the river, and they have restaurants down there.
Yeah.
That's the best kept secret in Chicago. They need to advertise that more because a lot of people don't know about it.
And now it goes all the way down towards Wolf's Point, which is that new building that Ryan was talking about, with all that area that's around the merchandise mart, the apparel center.
Right.
And there's a huge sky, big buildings for condos and things that are going up there. But now you can walk pretty much as far as that area where the river kind of forks.
Right.
Yeah.
I've never been to a restaurant down there, but I've walked down the Riverwalk.
Yeah, like City Winery and all that stuff are down there.
Sure. Yeah. Have you been down there? Had some drinks? Ben, you have?
Yeah, City Winery is really nice. I've been there a few times.
I've been to the other City Winery.
Yeah, well, that one's good, too.
Some shows.
Yeah, that one's good, too.
I haven't been down there. But during the summertime, just walking down there, man, that's awesome.
And it's a bustle of activity. I mean, you see a lot of things down there. It's great for people watching, too.
Here's the thing. We complain about how cold it is in the wintertime, but we forget how great it is because summertime downtown is just wonderful.
It's alive.
There's so many things going on, and just walking around, you just feel the energy of the city, and the Riverwalk needs to be advertised more.
You know, you can kayak. They have kayaks that are actually right below us, and you can also walk towards Navy Pier.
Yeah, I know. I'm a little worried about my hand touching the river.
It'll glow for a little while, but that'll be okay.
I want to keep all my fingers just in case they hit the water.
You know, you got nine more. Don't worry about it.
Think about that. That river is just disgusting. They need to clean it.
They're using less and less dye every St. Patrick's Day.
Here's the thing. I took a picture this year of the Army Green River, and then they dyed it Kelly Green, and then it went back to Army Green, and I compared all three pictures. Uh-huh. They're all green. It's just different colors
shades.
Of green.
Yep, different variances of green.
I mean, if you look back right now, it looks blue because of the sky.
And
but
because we're high up. Yeah.
If you look west, it's green. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's the Chicago River.
Yeah.
But highly recommend checking out the Riverwalk sometime
this
summer when it gets warm.
It's really nice.
It is. All right. It's 720 WGN. We got news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Pete McMurray, Andy Mazur in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Think about it. We're at April 20th today.
April 20th.
Okay. How many days in April? 10? So we're looking at 41 days until the 1st of June. You need to get in shape. That's the bottom line.
Quit looking at me when you say that.
And where does it start? You got to close the pie hole. I mean, we are. I come from a long line of overeaters. I overeat today. I overeat all the time. It's all about portion control with me.
I am a long line of overeaters.
Wasn't that the name of your college band,
Bradley? I think it was, yes. The Overeaters.
You can go to her website, victory-nutrition.com. She is a nutritionist, and we need her on the show. It's Beth Penzone. Beth, thanks for joining us.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for having me today.
I found out about Beth because my wife is a client of yours.
Yes.
And
yes.
I don't want to give away too much, but one of the things that I know women struggle with is what they eat and how it affects their bodies.
100%. And I think men and women alike, it's something we struggle with our whole lives, really. How much we're eating, what we should be eating, what we shouldn't be eating, because we are constantly being bombarded with marketing and new diets and trends and pills, and it can be really overwhelming.
I received some advice years and years ago when I was running a lot and my knee started to hurt, and my orthopedic surgeon said to me, Dr. Michael Terry, who's the Blackhawks doctor, we all know him here, he said, listen to your body. And I think that holds true about when you eat something and how it affects your body. If you're eating pasta and it sits there like a concrete block, it's probably not a good idea to continue eating that type of pasta. Am I right?
Right. And everyone reacts really differently depending on what they're eating, which is something a lot of times people don't put into account when they're thinking about what's right for them, is that they're not listening to how they're feeling when they are eating certain foods, because maybe someone down the street had a great success with something and a certain food they were eating that made them feel great, and they keep doing it just because someone else had success with it. But yes, listening to your body, and a lot of us have forgotten what it feels like to feel really good. We kind of settle for just being okay walking through our lives.
God, that's so true.
See,
right? Like,
go ahead.
Just that we wake up and we kind of settle for okay. We've forgotten what that really good feeling is day to day.
So my biggest problem being the bachelor that I am is not being able to really cook for myself, because, and the things that I do know how to cook, I make the biggest portion of it that is possible, because you buy certain things that are not built for just one person.
Right.
And then I put it on my plate and I can't stop eating it. I can't stop eating it. But I guess my question, first of all, is what would you suggest for somebody like me that doesn't cook a lot? And then the other thing would be how to stop doing what I'm doing right now.
Right. Easy, really go-to staple meals that you could maybe make a lot of, and then portion control them right away. So divide them out, put them in the freezer, so you're making your own kind of microwavable TV dinners so that they're set, so you don't have to recook all the time, but that it's not sitting out where you're going to put the whole portion on your plate, where it is very hard to stop. When you make it, portion it out and put half of it right away in your freezer for the days you don't want to cook.
Beth, are you one of those nutritionists that say, I don't know about steak, or are you one of those people, everything in moderation?
Everything in moderation. I think the biggest problem we have right now with diets and trends in America is that they're so drastic. They're so drastic that maybe we can do it and force ourselves to do it for 3, 4, 5 weeks. And then after that, we don't want to ever look at that food again, or we want all the sugar because we've restricted it so much. I think everything in moderation, and that's where the macro nutrients and kind of macro counting trend has kind of come on board recently, because it is everything in moderation and it becomes much more sustainable through the life, your lifetime.
And built into that too, I mean, you have to, I don't want to call it cheat, but you have to treat yourself every once in a while, don't you?
For sure. And the reason, and if you're balanced and you have all of these, a balanced lifestyle, I wouldn't even call it cheating, because it's just making a different choice that day. But you're not really cheating on anything, and you're just allowing yourself some balance in your diet. So it's okay that sometimes there's sugar involved. It's okay that sometimes, you know, you're having a higher fat meal. Once you kind of know if you're balanced out in all of your nutrients and everything of that sort, then you don't have to worry about it or think about it as cheating or having these total blow-off days where you go way off the rails when everything's in moderation. Because all of us have done that, right?
Yes,
like,
we have.
We're on it.
But
we're so on it. And then forget it.
Beth, let's not forget that sugar is the devil, okay?
Oh, my goodness, yes. And there's so much, like, marketing and everything that goes into our food these days. that it's hard to even start deciding what's right, what's wrong. But yes, there's nothing bad in any of our food if it is in moderation. The bad stuff that comes into our food is actually things that are added to it, like chemicals and preservatives. But the three main building blocks of what our food is made up of, carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, none of those three things are bad for you. And our body needs all of those.
Huh. Okay.
So our body is made to function with all three of those things. And an analogy I like to use a lot for people to kind of wrap their head around why we would need those three all the time, it's like a toolbox. And maybe you hire someone, a contractor, to come in to build something, but he left his hammer at home. That would be like trying to do a diet without any carbohydrates.
Yeah,
right? Your body doesn't function the same then.
Yeah, you can't do it.
I'm not sure.
Right.
I'm not sure if you can answer this, but I'm going to ask anyway because it's been on my mind. And I've heard things through the years that say that if you want to lose weight, it's much more about food than it is exercise, but we need both, I'm sure. But do you agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. So what people tend to do is for exercise, they start using exercise for weight loss. And what we have to remember is exercise is made for muscular health, for our cardiovascular health, and it's not made for weight loss. Weight loss comes from a caloric deficit, and it comes from the foods we eat. And you cannot outwork a poor diet. You can't just keep working out and have a poor diet, because one, either you're going to get hurt and you're not going to feel well, or two, it takes so much to put yourself in that caloric deficit. So 100%, you just have to remember that when you're exercising, you're doing it for the health of your body. You're not just doing it to lose weight.
But you want to tone up.
Weight comes from food.
You want to tone up too, right, Beth? Get in the gym,
yeah.
Tone your body, do some
right.
Sit-ups, maybe a few curls, Andy. Taking
yeah.
off that 100%. Shirt this summer.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll have to do
right.
the regular curls, not the 12-ounce curls. That's what's been bothering me. You know? That's the other thing,
that's,
too,
well,
especially
well,
in the summertime here. You, know?
You see on my
yeah,
list
got,
right here to
circled.
Ask her about booze. We're talking with Beth Penzone. You can go to her website, victory-nutrition.com. Beth, booze. Okay,
yeah.
Everything in my life is a numbers game. I say everything goes back to numbers. If you're on the dating scene, it's how many people that you're exposed to. If you're eating food in front of you, it's a numbers game. Booze. So I want to drink beer on the weekend, so I restrict my calories during the week so it all evens out.
Okay, well, and that is one way to go about it, I would say. You have to remember alcohol does some other things to your body as well. So
it slows.
When you're drinking alcohol, it can sometimes slow down the other processes of your body, right? So it's not doing exactly what it's supposed to. But
right.
Again, everything in moderation. And yes, those calories do come from somewhere. Sometimes people that are tracking or they're using an app such as MyFitnessPal or one of those apps, when you would put that in there, it says it has so like 120 calories, but it'll say it has no carbs or fats or proteins in it. Those all do come from somewhere, those calories. They just don't have a category to put them in. So
right.
It's important to realize it's still counting towards your intake every day or on the weekend.
I don't know if you recommend this, Beth, but one of the greatest things that I've done was I had the Lose It app, and I was reading about it, and someone said online, before you start doing the Lose It app, for 4 days, write down everything that goes into your body, and you'll be completely shocked what you eat.
Oh, it's amazing. So the first thing I do have my clients do is the Lose It app or MyFitnessPal. Start tracking everything you're eating. It is a huge eye-opener for most people where their nutrients are coming from. The typical American diet is very high in fat, and it's pretty high in carbohydrates. We're usually very deficient in protein, and being deficient in that protein over long, long periods of time does a number on our body. So just being aware of what you are taking in every day is a huge first step. And then from there, it's easy to kind of tweak, okay, I need to add some more protein in. This is where I can take fats out. But most of us don't even know how high a fat certain foods are that we're eating every day,
right,
or how low our protein intake is. So just starting things like that and becoming aware of what's in the food we're eating is a great big huge step. And they estimate that when we think we kind of know what we're eating, a lot of us will say, like, I think I eat about 2,000 calories a day. Commonly, we are underestimating by 30%.
What?
That's
30%?
A huge number. Yes, and, you know, everyone's like, I don't know where this weight is coming from.
Hmm.
It must be age. It must be this. A lot of times we are 30% off.
Yeah, it's your kid's macaroni and cheese. That's where it's coming from.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Beth, you know, this is a society now that wants to see things instantaneously. You want to be able to go on a diet and lose 30 pounds tomorrow. What do you say to people that you work with to kind of keep them on the straight and narrow and know that it's going to take a little time?
I guess I really have them try to remember most people have done that in the past. Most people have done this yo-yo kind of diet where they crash course for 30 pounds and feel great for maybe a couple months. I try to get them to remember what caused them to do it in the beginning, and did it work? Were they able to keep it off? What happened? Did they feel good during it? Most of the time, the answer is no, I didn't feel good during it, and two, it didn't stay off. Okay, so this time we're going to try a different route, and we're going to do it a slower, progressive way that we still maintain balance between all of our nutrients, and then we're going to teach you how to maintain that so that we get off of that yo-yo diet. It is very easy to crash course and want those results right away, but that also doesn't help with body composition, like you were talking about, building muscle, things like that. That takes time. So doing both of those in conjunction, you're going to see much better long-term results.
It's all about managing expectations, mm-hmm. Andy. It's going to take a while.
I have high expectations.
You want to work for the cuts, too. You want to use low weight, high reps. Get it going. We're talking with we're talking with Beth Penzone. Victory-nutrition.com is her website. 708 area code. I am an overeater. I feel like a lot of people are overeaters. As long as we have food in front of us, we're going to eat it. Last night, perfect example, we went out. It was my wife, Sarah, my son, Charlie. We went for sushi at Rai Sushi on Southport.
Mm-hmm.
We ordered 3 sushi rolls, and I'm not kidding. After I had a vodka soda, because that's the lowest amount of alcohol calories. Am I right, Beth?
You are correct.
Thank you.
Yep, you nailed that one.
I love vodka. It's wonderful. But after 3 rolls, I'm like, I'm done. I could have walked away, but we had another noodle dish coming, and they put it right in front of me. So who inhaled it? Thank you so much. That would be me. How do you stop that? You just have to limit your food. Don't keep ordering food. I don't know what to do. As long as food's in front of me, I'm going to eat it.
Right, and that's common. So, yeah, sometimes it is don't put it in front of you. Sometimes it's not having those trigger foods where you can't stop, because we all have those foods where it's once we start, for some reason, our brain just completely takes over and decides we need it until it's gone. So sometimes it means not having those trigger foods, not ordering those noodles if you know if they're there, you're going to eat it till it's gone. Sometimes it means learning how, like, small habit changes, asking for a half portion. You can do that at restaurants where they'll give you a half portion and they'll box up a half without even bringing it to you. Making small habit changes like that will help you and make you understand, okay, I didn't need all of it. This time I had half and I was fine. But making those small changes will really add up over time. But a lot of us have this relationship with food that once it's in front of us, we eat it till it's gone, even if we're uncomfortable. While we're finishing it. I mean, we're eating so we're uncomfortable.
That was me last night. Thanks, Beth. Thank you.
I know this is going to sound like an excuse, so I'm going to get that out of the way real quick here. I mean, for my line of work and for Pete's line of work, what we do, you're working different times of day. You're eating at different times of day. You're probably not eating at the right times of day. Mm-hmm. And I find myself here at the station, you know, feeling kind of hungry at certain points because I didn't eat correctly. And is there any way to stop? It's the binging. I mean, it's the... Because I need something. I feel like I need something right now. That's right. Kind of getting in my way.
Okay. So I would suggest when you have those, when I need things right now, what do you have ready or what do you have by you that would be a healthy choice that you could have right now? Most of us don't have those things ready.
Yeah,
I
don't.
So then we do choose poorer choices.
Yeah, it's like the candy dish that's in the boss's office.
Terrible.
You know, you go through there, you grab a Reese's peanut butter cup, and you think
right.
Like, you're happy, and then 10 seconds later, I'm hungry again.
You're hungry. So this is interesting. Here's a little fact, is that our stomach sends a signal to our brain if we're full or satisfied by the expansion of our stomach. Our stomach can't count calories. It can't macro count. So if you eat something such as, let's say, a Reese's, and you eat it, 10 seconds later, you're still hungry because your stomach didn't expand at all. So it doesn't even know you ate.
Mm.
So if you chose something, maybe, and this is where it comes into play if you have healthier choices available, something that was grown from the earth, a plant-based food, for that same little Rice Krispie treat or that Reese's cup, you could have like 3 cups worth of cucumbers or peppers, where then you would stay satisfied longer.
I know it's hard work at first, but writing down what you eat, you need to do this because you're going to be shocked, especially if you have kids and you have to make chicken nuggets or mac and cheese, which Beth hates me for saying that out loud. But sometimes you have to do that on the run and you grab a few before you put it in the sink. Those are calories. Another thing that you mentioned I want to go back to is when we go out to eat. The portions. Yep. Take half of it and bring it home. I want you to think about Cheesecake Factory, how big that plate is. It's the size of a hubcap.
It's as big as the menu.
It is. It's the size of a wheel rim, okay? And they bring out all that food. You got to send half of it home.
And don't forget about the bread that comes out before.
Right.
Oh, right. And have them, I always recommend, have them have half in a box before it even comes to you. Because as we talked about, if it's there, even if it's sitting on the plate next to you sometimes on your kid's plate, you're probably going to eat it as the parent. You're like, wait, you're not going to finish that plate?
Right.
Well, I'll finish that plate. Have them box it up right away. If you know your child's a really, really small eater, get the box when the meal comes.
Oh, jeez.
Put it away. Because if it's there, we'll eat it. If it's in the box, you really have to want it to be like, now I'm sitting at a table and I'm going to open my to-go box and eat it while I'm still here. So have those things, have them put it away, have half portions at restaurants. It's really easy, some really simple words to say, like, I would like steamed vegetables without butter and oil, because we know we always get those vegetables that don't taste anything like they do at home.
Right.
And that's because they're soaked in butter first.
Of course, they're really wonderful.
They fall apart.
Tons of salt.
The broccoli at home doesn't taste like that.
No, it does not.
And one thing to always think about, so chicken nuggets, mac and cheese, there are always healthy swaps you can make. I make tons of healthy chicken nuggets at home and put them in the freezer so that my kids still think they're getting frozen chicken nuggets. But I've made them. I know what's in them. The sodium is about a fourth of what's in the frozen meals. There's healthy swaps you can make without doing huge, drastic measures. And I always try to remind parents, if you wouldn't want your kids eating that way, you shouldn't be eating that way either.
Right. I mean,
so it's these drastic diets, would you put your kids on that?
No.
Probably not. So why, as their role model, would you do that?
And it's common sense, I know, but if you're trying to lose weight, don't go out and buy candy bars and put them in your pantry.
Correct.
Okay? And don't go to an Italian restaurant and ask for a ton of bread and cheese and oil and dip it, which tastes right. Wonderful, and I do it every time I go to an Italian restaurant. But think about that for a second. Before you're going to eat a plate of pasta, you dip bread in oil and put cheese on it.
Mm-hmm.
What are we doing?
Yep.
That's yeah. So
and then
funny.
You're going to eat that bread just in a different form and the pasta with more oil on it.
I am fat. What am I doing? We just have to remind ourselves these things. And that's where you come in to help people and put balance back in their lives. Am I right?
Correct. Yes. To get them to start balancing out. All of our food is made up of those 3 building blocks we hear of all the time. Carbohydrates, fats, proteins. Teaching people what's in their food, how it impacts their lives and their bodies, and how to get them balanced between those 3 nutrients so that their body can function the most effectively and efficiently, and they can get back to living and feeling great again.
Well, give me a takeaway. I know tomorrow's Easter and a lot of people are going to brunch. I'm going to brunch and Passover. Do you have a meal at the end?
At the end, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We have one at the beginning, actually, the Seder at the beginning.
Right, the Seder. Okay. But let's say next week on Monday, how can people jumpstart? What can they do? Would be writing down their food for a week or...
Yep. So what I would recommend jumpstarting would be starting, download one of those apps, MyFitnessPal. We all have smartphones at this point, or a Lose It, and start really tracking what you're eating on a normal day. Don't do anything crazy right away. The first couple days, start tracking what you normally eat so you know where you need to make corrections.
And by the way,
you know where you need to tweak things out.
And Beth, these apps already have, it has millions of food in there. So if you start typing something, it'll come up right away.
Oh, for sure. And I always say, and I recommend if you are going to start tracking, look at the logs, look if they're realistic, because some of them have, you know, are user-based entries. If something looks like you put brownie in and it says that it only has, you know, 5 calories, it's probably not accurate, be honest with yourself. Don't just pick the one with the lowest.
Do we have a weight loss app for you? You're going to feel great about yourself.
Yeah, so start tracking what you're eating. Start looking at where you can make corrections. And those apps, there's even scanner codes where you could just scan packages. They have made it so easy for us to do these things. It just takes a little bit of effort, but it's definitely worth it. So I would start tracking. I would start really looking at your portions and looking at how much food you are eating. I recommend when you look at your plate, try to make half of it be grown from the earth. Plant-based foods, the more you can eat of it, the more volume you can have, is amazing for our body, our digestive health. There's so many reasons those plants are important to us, and a lot of times it's the smallest part on our plate.
That is so true.
Even if you just fill a plate first with half plant-based foods and eat the rest of your meal as you normally would, you're going to feel more satisfied. You're going to eat less of the other foods. And then start making some really easy swaps in the recipes you already enjoy.
There you go, Andy.
Making swaps in the foods you already like.
He's downloading the app right now. It's not a joke. And by the way, one of our great friends, Amada, worked with you, and she lost how many pounds?
Oh, I'm not sure at her total, but she made an amazing life change.
I'm going to say over 30 just by watching her food, and she looks fantastic. Yep. And thank you for working with my wife, because we do need to remind ourselves. I have the luxury of having people like you on the radio to remind me, but for the normal people out there, they need a reminder. And, you know, the app is a quick way. Penzone, sure. You go to victory-nutrition.com. Beth, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and enjoy your holidays.
All right, you too. It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in the Allstate Skyline Studios alongside Andy Mazur. You're going to a band tonight at the House of Blues.
Yeah, it's the Yacht Rock Review. I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's I think it's a band that does some covers. Of like Steely Dan,
I love that the
Little River Band, those kind of things, a little yacht rock action.
I love that.
Should be cool.
What's the name of the band?
It's called the Yacht Rock Review. I don't know if that's the name of the band or what, but
they're just doing covers of classic rock tunes, and you're drinking beer.
Yeah, I'm drinking beer, and not a lot of beer now because I got to have it in moderation. All right.
We were just talking about nutrition. If you're just joining us, think about a time when you were in great shape. Because any psychologist or expert or motivational person or career coach would tell you, when did you feel great about yourself? Go back to that time, and how did you do it?
Okay. Well, I was probably a junior in high school. I was on the cross-country team, and I was 16 years old.
Okay. Got it.
I could eat seven cheeseburgers.
So you were exercising on the cross-country
team.
Yeah,
I could eat seven cheeseburgers and not gain a pound.
Okay. How much exercise have you done in the last week? Cardio.
Including walking from my car here?
That doesn't count.
Okay.
I'm talking about an exercise, not an activity. Exercise is getting your heart rate up.
That would be carry the one, minus six, 2016.
Okay. All right. I think we know our answer. Yeah.
Well, that's why I asked that question, because I wanted to know. Because I went on one of these crazy, that's a popular diet. Let's put it that way. I don't want to get
diets any, don't work.
I don't want to get
read the book.
Okay, but here's the deal.
Yep,
I lost 30-ish pounds, and this was of a 2011-ish.
Okay,
so a little younger, and it tells you not to do a lot of exercise because it's counterintuitive to the program that you're doing. So that's why I wanted to ask the question about whether or not nutrition was more important than actually exercising. Now, again, I understand exercise is very important because it is all about the heart rate. But where you lose the weight is the food. And I'm glad she explained it like she did, because you don't exercise to lose weight. You exercise to keep the heart rate going and to keep your body in good shape.
And you feel better about yourself.
You do.
I mean, it all works in unison.
Yeah, I know. But see, half the battle for me now is actually getting into the gym. Once I go in there and get into a routine, it's all good. But it's that first step that is just so hard to do.
You and everybody listening.
That's what
right
I mean.
Now.
I know I'm not alone.
Do you think I like going into the gym?
No, of course you don't.
I hate it.
Well, you like to because you like to, you know.
No, and
show
I
off
don't.
Your fancy t-shirts.
There's some days where I just can't do it, but I know if I look at a cheeseburger, because I have my father's genes, and God bless my dad, who passed away at the age of 70 of cancer. He had two types of cancer. So cancer runs in my family, heart disease runs in my family, but his weight fluctuated like Elvis. And I remember that my mother would fry up these pork chops, and he'd have two burnt pork chops for dinner. It's like, this guy's just going to be angry. Let's give him some bread. How about a side of, you know, pasta, something?
Yeah.
He was always on his diet his whole life, so I always processed that and thought about it.
Yeah, and my father growing up had high blood pressure before it was, you know, really controllable through medication, so it was a change in diet, and that's why I don't like seafood, is because every Friday or every Thursday or whatever, I'd walk into to the house from school and smell whitefish, and it just made me gag.
Really?
Yeah, but we had to do it because, you know, Dad needed the low sodium. And
sure.
But to this day, I don't like fish.
Just because of that. Yeah. Oh, man. So you need a buddy, too. That's another thing that
you need to
work on.
I have people that are encouraging me to do things. I had someone encourage me to get a foam roller. To do a little just that stuff there, and just to get something going, right?
I'm with you.
Yeah, to get something going.
I have two of them.
And then
I do.
Send me some exercises that were like on the YouTube thing,
right?
That you could do at home,
without
having to go out.
Wait, stop right there for a second, because YouTube is one of the best things that you can do, because everybody has a phone, and most of us have computers that we can turn on and put up YouTube. And I'm a guy that has the flexibility of an 80-year-old man.
Yeah,
I can barely touch my toes.
I'm inflexible in body and mind.
So the first of the year, I mean, I have a New Year's resolution every year, different ones, but one of them was to, you know, have more flexibility. And they have a thing online that I haven't watched in probably a month, but it's 10-minute yoga.
Well, yeah, this is kind of the concept behind what I was said, but here's the problem. I look at these people doing yoga, and I'm like, boy, they're in shape. What am I doing? I can't even touch my toes.
That's why you do it in the comfort of your own home.
I understand that, but it's like a self-defeating prophecy by looking at this going, wait a minute, this person is in the best shape of their life, and they're trying to... Okay, I get it.
When you were learning to drive a car, the first time you got behind the wheel, were you a great driver?
I was. I kind of was.
Just for sake of argument, can you say you weren't?
I was not. You know, okay. I was a terrible driver. I used to drive with my eyes closed.
So you have to practice.
You do have to practice.
Right.
Well,
it's the same thing with exercise. It's not going to happen right away.
Well, that's true. And that's why I would be kind of afraid to go outside of my home and go into like a yoga class or something like that and be one of those that everybody's kind of like, who the heck is this guy? You know, I'm sitting there laying down while everybody is doing their poses. Going, oh my God, this is too much.
That's why you do it in the comfort
this
of your own home.
This is why you do it in the comfort of your home.
When we graduated from college, I moved to Rockford. I lived in Rockford, and I moved to Chicago in 1998.
Okay.
I was a fat slob. I'm 5'10". I was close to 200 pounds. I've never been that out of shape. I never did any cardio. We had a trainer that came in the studio, and he looked at me. He's like, how much cardio are you doing? I go, well, I lift weights three times a week.
That's not cardio.
He's like, that's not doing it. So he said, work on some cardio. How about if we have you run in a 5K race 4 months from now? So I said, okay, yeah, I can absolutely do that. I'm the type of person that needs a deadline. So a month out from that 5K race, I went outside, and I lived with my two brothers at the time. I was at Racine and Diversey, and I'll never forget this. I ran from Diversey to Wellington, and I thought I was going to have a heart attack.
Oh, nice.
Think about how short of a distance
that
is.
Distance.
And I think I had to stop once. I couldn't run. So eventually, I started running two blocks and then three blocks. And I know that people tell you these stories and most of us don't believe it, but this is my story and this is absolutely true. So I got up to a mile and then I got up to 2 miles and 3 miles. And then once you get to a certain point, your body plateaus and you got to move on to something else. Then I started taking spin classes. Even though I hate riding a bike, it's so boring to me. But you go to a class where they're playing rock music, and it's fun. You got to find something you like.
No, that's the truth. It's true. I mean, I used to run for enjoyment, then I ran competitively in high school, and I hurt my knee, and I hurt it again. So running to me is kind of a mental block that I can't really do anymore.
We're at that age where you really don't want to run anymore.
Well, it's true. I mean, that's true too. And you know, like I said, getting to the gym is one thing, and then I have these grand plans all the time. Every summer, I have these grand plans.
Yep.
My bicycle, I get it worked on at the local bike shop. You know, in my area, because I like to shop local, and I do that, and I get the thing all ready, and it leaves my garage maybe twice in an entire summer.
Well, you got to schedule things.
Well, I'd like to ride here. You know what I mean? And now we have.
Is that realistic though? You're always in a hurry.
Exactly. I'd have to leave yesterday to get here today. At the rate I ride. But, you know, now we have access to a health club here in this building.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you can ask me how many times since I've signed up for that health class, how many times have I gone? And that would be the same number that the little boy shot at, which is nothing.
I don't mean the laugh, but you
Well, no, it's the truth. And I don't mean to make light of it, but it's just...
This is what happens with you. We start talking, and then you beat yourself up.
Well, that's the truth, because, you know, and the thing is, and you were talking about moderation and running. So here's me. They tell you to run a block your first time, right? So I'm running four because I can't just run the one block. I've got to prove that I can do that and more. And then I get really sore and really frustrated, and I don't do it again.
Okay.
It's competitiveness. It's hyper competitiveness.
You're a biker.
Well, I'm not technically a biker, but I mean, I'd like to run.
Why don't you try to get out and ride 5 miles one day a week?
Okay.
Because 5 miles, what's that going to take? 20 minutes?
45
minutes. Okay, let's make it 3 miles.
Okay,
that's 20 minutes.
Yeah, and I've got things within 3 miles that I can go to.
Okay,
yeah,
or hop over to the lake and hop on the
bike. And I've done
path.
That. I mean, the mile's not that it's not that far from my house.
One of the worst things that you can do if you're trying to lose weight or get in shape is beat yourself up. We all beat ourselves up.
Well,
mentally beating yourself up. Because you look in the mirror, it's like, oh my gosh, what am I doing?
And you know, I found, seriously, if you beat yourself up mentally, you end up beating yourself up physically because you're like me. You try to do way too much the first time, and it turns you off completely to try it ever again.
Why do we all have such high expectations for ourselves? Not just with losing weight at work, and if we don't meet those expectations, we're depressed, and we just beat ourselves down.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's society, but it's more like... You want to try to be better than your neighbor all the time. And, for whatever reason. I mean, you always want to have, if it's, you know, Christmas decorations, you want to have a better Christmas decoration than the guy next door to you. I mean, if it's a car, you want to have a better car than the guy who has a park next door. And it's you want to be more in shape than the guy you're sitting across from.
Well, having a buddy is the easiest thing.
Yeah.
Because it's accountability. Is there someone that you can do this with?
I can probably find somebody.
Like... In the next few days?
I can probably find somebody in the next few days.
I have the luxury of having 7 brothers. And
yeah, you've got it made. You've got
and
like
3 of them I'm very competitive with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I like to wake up early on a Saturday morning to say, hey, I'm done with my workout, in your face, and throw it at them.
Yeah.
And also my son has basketball on Saturdays too. So.
And you know, I find myself too, I mean, it's funny, Darren Jackson, the color commentator for us here on radio. I was goofing around with him in the clubhouse one day, and I said, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was talking about getting a workout, and he goes, I've already done that. I got up at 6 o'clock and went to the gym. And I'm like, man, I admire the heck out of you, and I'd love to be able to look at somebody and say, you know what? Yeah, I was in the gym at 6 a.m., and I'm already done for the day with my workout.
I can't get to do it.
I can't. It's just...
It's okay. I hate it, too.
No.
So what time is the perfect time for you?
Right about now.
Well, unfortunately, we still have 10 minutes left in the show.
I can sit for 10 more minutes. That's not a problem.
We're getting text messages. 630 area code 847 area code. Drink lots of water daily. Do you drink a lot of water?
No, I substitute water for things that have water in them, like coffee.
Okay.
And I'm addicted to the caffeine in the sodas that I drink.
Are you an overeater?
You know, I don't necessarily think I'm an overeater. I think I eat more than I need to during the day. So if I don't have breakfast, which sometimes I don't, I find myself making up for it at lunch or not having enough lunch and making up for it, like I said, walking the hallways here looking for whatever I can find or
it's all about
downstairs in our
ahead.
Pedway. You know, I mean, there's like every fast food chain you can think of.
If you're filling in on the morning show, you got to bring food. You got to bring something to snack on.
Well, it's the truth. I mean, I did. I used to bring, and I do on Sundays every once in a while. But I am going to have to wait till next week because of Passover. But I bring oatmeal and raisins with me, and fire it up in the microwave here.
Okay.
So you know, one it's. I think of what it is. Different things about what becomes a habit, and there's different schools of thought about how long it takes something to develop as a habit. Some people say 2 weeks, some people say 3 weeks, that if you consistently do something,
right,
it becomes habit.
Okay, what is your...
So I get to about 2 days.
No, you need to give it a little bit more time.
Yeah, so if they can figure out a way to get a habit in 2 days, I'm golden.
I've always said 3 weeks okay. for a habit.
Yeah,
it's going to take you 3 weeks.
I've heard anywhere between 2 and 3.
Okay.
And you know what? I think it's true because you could have the allure of trying to do something new, and you know the shine just kind of wears off after 2 or 3 days, right? I mean, hey, I want to go challenge myself to do something at the gym, and I go and I'm there for 2 or 3 days, and I'm like, yeah, I've had enough of this. You know, I mean, it's getting past that makes it all worthwhile in the end, I guess.
If you do go on any type of diet mm-hmm. or restrict your food somehow, yeah. always have a plan afterwards. There is a guy that I'm very good friends with that went on this extreme diet where he didn't eat sugar
mm-hmm.
for 6 months.
Oof.
And I'm like, John, what is your plan when you get off it? He's yeah. like, just keep doing what I'm doing, mm-hmm. which isn't
good
realistic
luck. Yeah,
because
luck
you open the gates. Well, he's gained back his weight.
Yeah, see, I did a...
You got to have a lifetime plan.
I did a no sugary drink thing for about that same period of time. It started just one day it's on a whim, right?
Okay.
And then there's something to it to say to somebody also, hey, listen, I'm not drinking such and such. I'm not doing this. Or, hey, I'm going to... It's not like it's braggadocious, but it's more like, I'm trying something. I'm trying to do something to better myself.
Right.
But in the end... You saw what I had to drink here during, you know, eating the great burger that came over here.
Well, that's wonderful. And that's, you know, you can cheat one day
no,
a week and don't
and
beat yourself up.
It's the truth.
But,
it's the truth.
Do look at labels. Do look at how much sugar is in things.
Mm-hmm.
No one loved Captain Morgan more than me. And years ago, I'd say probably 3 years ago, I just switched to all vodka,
mm-hmm.
which is just wonderful. I mean, I love it.
See, now my biggest problem is that I don't really like the hard alcohol.
Okay.
And I
How about light beer? Do you have to do craft?
Okay, there's no way because I've become a beer snob in my old age
mm-hmm.
where just, you know, the typical light beers just don't do it for
me. I know. You're a craft guy.
If they're there
yeah.
and they're the only choice,
yeah.
absolutely, I'm all in. I don't turn my nose up at it, but I know that I can be drinking better.
Moderation?
Depends on my crowd.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you go to this
depends on the crowd.
You go to the House of Blues tonight, you see this rock band.
Depends on the crowd. Because here's the thing. If I go with one person,
right.
okay, and I want to buy a round, I'm mm-hmm. buying a round for one person. That person is buying a round for one person, and then you're like, okay, well after that you're kind of catch as catch can. If you're there with 5 or 6 people, you feel the need to want to buy a round for somebody, and you want to buy a round, and somebody wants to buy you a round.
But that's one day a week. That's okay. That's one day a week.
This is true, but you know, you get your whole week's worth in one day.
Great text message. Lots of willpower is needed initially, then it becomes an everyday thing, which is true.
It's true.
It is true. I mean, if you love, I don't know, having a Reese's peanut butter cup
mm-hmm.
every single day,
yeah.
and you... get the willpower and you're like, okay, I'm not going to do this for 10 days, 20
yeah.
days. After a while, it's like, I don't need it anymore.
Yeah. And that kind of that's kind of what I was getting at with the, you know, turning down the drinks, the sugar drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it was more of like, I'm doing this, you know, and then you tell yourself, hey, this is good. You know, you're doing this and you brag about it a little bit and then you fall off the wagon.
Liquid calories are the worst, man.
Mm-hmm.
They go straight to your gut and just sit there.
And you know how it is when, you know, you and I are the same age, you know, you get older and it's even harder to lose 1 pound because your metabolism is so slow now.
I can't remember if it was a book or an article that I read, but as you get older, when you're in your 40s, you have to work out 4 days a week just to maintain. When you're in your 50s, you have to work out 5 days a week just to maintain and so on. 66 days, 77 days. You got to move your body.
Yeah. I've tried this plan.
That's how hard it is.
I've tried this plan, too, where people I know that are going to the gym, I say, hey, do me a favor. Will you work out for me, too?
Okay.
It doesn't help me very much. It helps them a lot, but it's not helping me.